Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Our good friend Mark Steer from Penn Action is going to be here talking about Governor Corbett's massive handout. This, again, you know, reading right from the GOP playbook. Cut education, cut social programs, cut things for you and me. Big handouts for corporations. Here's a big, wet, sloppy kiss. Just like they're doing in Wisconsin, just like they're doing in Ohio, I guess Pennsylvania, we had to do it as well, and we're going to talk about that. Because I think it's important to understand that while we're going to be asked to sacrifice, we're going to be asked to tighten our belts and, you know, eat store brand mac and cheese, the corporate titans are doing very well. We see story after story for the very well-to-do. Life is good. Stocks are up, bonuses are up, pays up, everything's fine, except for you and me, except for the working people of this country. Things are great. If you find yourself in the upper strata of the top 5%, you're doing all right. If you're lucky enough to be in that top 1%, somewhere near 400 grand a year, things are okay. But if you find yourself way up there, that top one-tenth of what 1%, things are grand. You know, you might be able to even pick up the phone and call a governor and have the governor, or at least someone pretending to be you, have the governor lay out everything we already know. And if you have not heard the fake phone call between Governor Walker and the imitation David Koch, I suggest you do. It's a good 20 minutes, but here's the reality. It lays it out black and white. Honestly, arrogantly, calmly, confidently. And what it is it's what we've always known. It's what we've been talking about on this program for years. Their grand plan, they admitted it. Also, Professor Richard Wolff's going to lay out the how he got soaked, how the rich soaked the working class, how they walked away with fortunes at our expense, and now they're blaming us for the mess that they have created. He's always interesting. He's the guy who did the video when capitalism hits the fan. Just an outstanding guy, and I look forward to talking to him in the second hour. And in the third hour, our good friend Wisconsin State Representative Brad Halsey. He's going to be here talking about evidently a policeman was stuck in an elevator, and he called the fire department. And the police wouldn't let the fire department into the building at the state capitol there in Wisconsin. Again, you know, if you're that cop stuck in the elevator, you can't be too thrilled with that. But this is the kind of nonsense that's gone on. And as we speak, it looks like the citizens of Wisconsin have entered their house. There was, you know, when the Ustream video was up, Mark Rowan was doing, when he had the video up, you saw people come into the capitol. There was talk of possibly arresting them. Hopefully that's kind of calmed down, because right now, after this length of time, the worst thing that could possibly happen would be for there to be some kind of an uprising, some kind of a violent act. Or maybe, as you know, Governor Walker said, you know, they had thought about putting some troublemakers in the crowd. Who knows? Maybe one of those troublemakers, because they claim they found ammunition at several of the entrances, which, you know, that is not a left-wing tactic. That is, that's putting troublemakers at the door, as far as I'm concerned. So I got to be honest, I'm not sold on the idea that this was any of the citizens who have been at that Capitol over the time that we were there, over the time that this has been going on. My gut reaction is this was something that's planted. And it's something that, I got to be honest with you, I don't put past that governor. I think he's crazy enough. I think he's off the ledge far enough that he would not mind to see something like that happen. So it's tense moments from what I understand now, but not tense in the way that you would think. Not how Fox News is going to want to spin this. They were armed and they were going to burn the place down. No. They wanted to be in their house. They've been denied for so long by this guy who has locked doors on them that they wanted to be where they have been for the last week, protesting and having their voices heard in their house. Now, as I understand, the judge has opened the doors. At normal Capitol hours, people will be allowed in there. But as I understand, at 6 p.m., they close the doors, and those folks are supposed to get out. So when we get our update a little bit later on, we'll find out about that. And also when we talk to Brett Halsey, we'll find out about that. At the end of all of this, it comes down to really honestly and truthfully people standing up for their rights. And the more you see going on in Wisconsin, the more you see going on in Ohio, the more you realize that there are people who are now energized, they're now engaged, and there is a reason for this. Because most of us realize that, you know, I always talk about my membership as a union member. It took me out of poverty, allowed me to pay for a house. I bought and paid for a house, allowed me to do a lot of things in life that probably wouldn't have. And when you look at over the years, as union membership has declined, as the union membership has shrunk, so has the middle class. Because common sense tells you that when you have something that someone who can raise the wage up, it's going to bring everybody up. So for every union job out there paying, you know, $20 an hour, there was a comparable non-union job paying similar wages with similar benefits. It brought everybody up. But as things have been suppressed, as things have been pushed down, what you've seen is you've seen the entire middle class go down. You know, when I was driving a truck, we used to tell the non-union drivers, once the union companies are gone, your wages are going to plummet too. And that's what we've seen. You know, I was just talking to a guy the other day who said, yeah, while the union companies have taken pay cuts, they've taken larger pay cuts because they can. There's nowhere for them to go. And as I've said from the beginning, your labor creates the wealth. The people who go and swing the hammer and carry the bags and do all of the things that have to be done to create wealth, you should be compensated for your time. And this is what this is really about. It's about having a fair voice. It's about being able to stand together and just have some basic fairness. And the more I look at attacks coming from the extreme right, the more I look at the Walkers and the Kasichs, the Snyders in Michigan, the more I look at these guys, it's all about greed. It's all about how much can we give to the upper crust. Because what they're doing is they're stealing from the working people. They're literally stealing from them to give to the business community. This idea that they create jobs. And I look at this thing that that Tom Corbett's doing here in Pennsylvania. They're going to, and this is kind of a complicated thing, and Mark Steer is going to explain it a lot better than I can. But they're giving tax breaks for purchasing equipment. So if you know, like if you own a really large company and you buy a machine, current IRS rules, current rules, tax rules. You take the depreciation over a couple of years. What they're going to do is they're going to move that all up front. You can take it all this year. And in the time when we're, A, in the tank revenue-wise, and B, have a massive, massive hole in our budget, this is a mistake. Because we've done this a number of times, and it's never created the jobs. What it's done is it's been a windfall for people who were going to invest in machinery anyway. It has, on a very small margin, seen people purchase and upgrade when necessary. But at the end of it, this is not a job creator. This is a job killer. And all of this tax money that we just seem to be giving away in the hopes, maybe, hopefully, oh, please, would they please create jobs? It doesn't. And it hasn't, Jake. It just, you know, as much as we were told the Bush tax cuts were going to bring us jobs, it didn't. The more we've been told tax cuts are the panacea, it's not.
Well, as we've seen, Rick, I mean, there's a company in your community. Over the years, you got quite a few dollars from the state and federal. And the first opportunity, when there was a higher bidder at another state, they took off. So at the end of the day, it's all about money. And the right wing is so good at trying to persuade the public, well, you know, these tax breaks they give to corporations, they create jobs. Well, you know, to a large degree, that's not true. If you're going to give tax breaks, they have to be targeted, and these companies have to prove that they create jobs.
Absolutely. And there's got to be some kind of clawback. Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, there's been all of this talk, and I hear it from all the right-wing pundits. Well, you're beating up on the job creators. We need job creators. Like, there's only a certain handful of people who could possibly do this, and they hang around with the Koch brothers. That's not true. You know, they make it sound like without these handful of robber barons, without these hundreds of robber barons who manage these huge companies, we would all just be standing around staring at each other, starving to death. And we should be thankful that they have all of this money and they have all of this power, because we couldn't possibly exist without them. And that's the meme that they keep wanting to push out there, that without them, there would be nothing. Like, we're completely incapable of fending for ourselves. It's really, really kind of an amazing frame that I'm surprised right-wing people buy into. Because after all, they are the party of the individual, and we're pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. I'm completely missing that. Completely missing it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Steer from Penn Action. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Senate Republicans passed a resolution Thursday calling on police to take state Senate Democrats into custody for contempt of the Senate. It's not an arrest warrant and doesn't come from a judge. The Wisconsin Democrats say they didn't flinch at the news and are staying put in Illinois in defense of collective bargaining for public workers. The Wisconsin Professional Police Association slammed the Republican action, saying using forcible detention of elected officials because they won't allow you to dictate with a free hand is an unreasonable abuse of police power and is insanely wrong. The Wisconsin Capitol remained locked down Thursday as a court hearing continued to win open public access again. Even as a reporter, I had a hard time getting in on Thursday. This is what getting in sounded like. Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to get into the building, please.
On the opposite side is the entrance.
There's only one entrance open?
The entrance is on the opposite side.
Could you explain to us why the judge's order is not being honored and all doors open to the public? I mean... Gayla Olson of Black Earth, Wisconsin, describes what it was like once she managed to finally get into the Capitol building.
We had four police officers around us, okay? Four police officers, and then we had to be escorted by two police officers just to get out of the building. It was like a police state.
Everywhere you go in this Capitol now, police are here and the hallways are empty. Just about 100 protesters in the rotunda downstairs pounding on a drum. Police everywhere asking for IDs. This is not the People's House anymore and the Wisconsin tradition of how it normally is here. And people are gathered outside, hundreds of them, in cold, and they're angry about this. And they are demanding to be let inside as they express their passionate disapproval of the lockdown of the People's House. Inside, about 100 demonstrators are still here who have been spending the night here. And right now there's a drum circle going on in the Capitol Rotunda here in Madison, keeping the drumbeat of this protest, this pro-worker protest, alive here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Jessica Eanes is one of the roughly 100 protesters still sleeping overnight in Wisconsin's capital. She expects the court soon to order the doors open to the public.
Hope that they would actually open the doors, because that would just break my heart if the Department of Administration put themselves in contempt of court.
Democratic state lawmaker like Representative Fred Clark again set up their desks outside Thursday to protest the lockdown.
As long as the building remains effectively in a lockdown, as long as that's the case, we'll come out here to allow those people to exercise their right to speak with their representatives.
Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I'll tip my hat to the new Constitution. Take a
I'm telling you, everyone who voted for Corbyn, I think you're going to get fooled on this one. I attended a press conference today here at the Capitol in Harrisburg. Our governor, Tom Corbett, had released something late last Friday, basically giving a big, wet, sloppy kiss to corporate America. And I just, again, you know, you look at what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio. We're giving away all of this this resource to the so-called job creators in the hope that, oh, maybe, please, once you create one job, at the expense of the poor, at the expense of the children, at the expense. And look, I'm not making this sound, pulling on heartstrings. This is the reality. We're cutting education. We're cutting adult basic in Wisconsin, Badger Care. We're cutting these programs so that we can, I guess, sacrifice at the altar of the ultra wealthy. Mark Steer was one of the folks there at the press conference, along with a number of other progressive leaders and labor people, to lay out the issue of the governor's handing out $833 million at a time when all I hear, deep, drastic cuts to education, social programs, it's insane. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick. Good to be here.
You know, I look at this and I go, you know, this is not the time to be handing out massive amounts of resources, especially when you're talking about cutting $1 billion to education.
You know, Rick, I was out of town last week. I had some family problems, visiting my mother. And I'm driving back and I get an email that says, did you see that Corbett had a $200 million cut in corporate tax? And I thought it had to be a joke. How, when you have a $3.5 to $4 billion deficit that's going to force you to cut health care and education by drastic amounts, how could you even think about doing this? And then I look at the details, it's really $833 million. It's like another 20% on top of the existing deficit. It's unconscionable. It's unbelievable. I think there's a long-term strategy here, but it's a strategy basically to continue the upward redistribution of wealth from working people in the middle class to the people in the top half of 1%.
That's plain. That's clearly obvious. But let's talk about this for a second, because, you know, when I look at it, it makes no sense to me as a working person why you would hand out all this money. But from a corporate standpoint, I guess I still don't understand it. Explain it to me. What's the whole program here?
I mean, they have a rationale. I mean, it's bogus, but it's a rationale. And let me tell you what the rationale is and why it's bogus. They say if we let businesses deduct from their business taxes in the first year 100% of the value of the investments they make instead of deducting it over a longer period of time over the life of whatever piece of capital equipment they buy, that will encourage them to invest more and that will create jobs. Now, you know what? That might be a slight bit of truth to that. The problem is, of all the ways you can create jobs, this is the least efficient one. A Republican economist, Mark Zandi, says that you only get about 27 cents for every dollar you spend in economic stimulus. If, on the other hand, you raise unemployment insurance or raise food stamps or give people health care, you get a dollar and a half or a dollar and three quarters benefit for every dollar you spend. So it doesn't, it's an inefficient way to create jobs. Second thing is, businesses will get this tax break whether they invest in Pennsylvania or in other states. A business that pays Pennsylvania taxes because they do some business here, but invests in California or Wyoming or North Carolina will get a tax break. So we are giving our hard-earned tax dollars to these businesses without any guarantee that they're going to invest in Pennsylvania.
So let me ask.
Third point.
Okay.
This is, you know, unlike the federal government where if they do something like this, they can run a bigger deficit. Here, any time we cut tax revenues, we got to cut spending. And $830 million of spending in Pennsylvania will create 15,000 jobs, including 6,000 in the private sector. We're going to lose more jobs than this program's going to create.
Which is interesting because the Republicans ran on, we're the job creators. We know how to create jobs. Yet everything I keep seeing coming out of either Wisconsin, Ohio, or now this is actually going to, cost us jobs.
It's just not about jobs. That is a smokescreen. It's about redistributing income from middle class and working people to the rich. Well, that's all it's about. They want to cut government spending that benefits working people, that benefits the middle class. And they want to cut taxes for the rich.
Let's talk about
that. And that's what this is about.
Let's talk about this depreciation thing. I don't think most people understand it. If I buy a computer, I deduct that over a couple of year period, right?
Right.
As a business expense. What this is doing is just shortening that period that I can take it all right now instead of spreading it out, right?
Right.
So I guess my I can almost see the logic that, you know, if I need a new computer, now would be a good time to invest in it. Then it might help me operate my business better, more efficiently. But I don't know that that actually helps me create jobs. I think it would actually cost jobs in the long run because I would be buying more efficient machinery that would take less people to work.
Yeah, I mean, a lot depends on the kind of investment you do. The one thing we do know is buying another computer will create fewer jobs than spending more money on education and healthcare. And that Republican economist that told us. The other thing is, you know, they keep saying that they'll get the money back because they're not really, they're just shortening the period in which you take the tax break. They're not really giving you more money. But the fact is, corporate has told us again and again that when the economy improves, he wants to cut corporate taxes. So we're never going to get a lot of this money back. And besides which, we need it this year. This is the year we have almost $4 billion deficit. In 3 or 4 years, the economy's better. We're not going to need the money as much. So it makes no sense to be creating this kind of stimulus package, which isn't going to create a lot of jobs. It's going to cost more jobs than it creates, and which puts off tax collections down the road when we need it desperately this year.
Let me ask you this, Mark. You know, in looking at this tax break, who's eligible to get it? I mean, you know, the guy who owns a small landscaping company, he buys a new lawnmower. Is it for him or is it for the big multi-state, multinational corporations?
Any corporation is entitled to take advantage of this. So small corporations will get some benefit. But, you know, we all know that the biggest benefit is going to go to the biggest companies because they're the ones who are most capital intensive, are the ones who are most likely to be investing in new capital equipment. And because they're not just doing it here, they're doing it all over the country, but getting a tax break in Pennsylvania. The small businesses certainly would benefit more from state spending than they would from a tax break like this.
Have we seen this happen before? I mean, has this scenario come up in the past?
Yeah, you know, the reason it's happening is because the federal tax bill that Obama negotiated with the Republicans created this program on the federal level. And that was a negotiation that took place in December. Now, when you change federal corporate tax law, that creates a situation in which the state in Pennsylvania can decide, do we go along with the federal law or do we not go along with it? Well, it turns out that when Republican Governor Mark Schweiker was in office, the last time they did something like this at the federal level in 2002, he said, we're not going to do this in Pennsylvania. It doesn't make sense for us in Pennsylvania. So the precedent is not to do it. This is Corbett's decision. He didn't have to do it. Now, the funny thing is there are a lot of states in the country where, by law, if the federal government changes the corporate tax system, the state corporate tax system automatically changes. You know what's happening in some of those states? Right now, they're working in their legislature to change the state law to decouple the state corporate tax from the federal tax because they're in the same situation Pennsylvania is. They have a desperate budget situation. They have revenue shortfalls. They don't want to cut their corporate taxes because they don't want to cut services as much. Here in Pennsylvania, where we have a governor who wants to slash the state budget and wants to cut taxes for the very wealthy and for the corporate executives who gave him so much money in campaign contributions, he's not concerned about that issue. So, you know, we're not doing what Republicans in the past have done in Pennsylvania. We're not doing what sensible Republicans in other states are doing. We're certainly not doing what Democrats are doing. We're following a very right-wing, extreme, radical agenda in Pennsylvania, the same agenda we see in Ohio and Wisconsin.
So what do we do to stop this, Mark?
We got to organize. We got to tell people. Now, the amazing thing is no one knows about this because there hasn't been one article written in a newspaper in Pennsylvania about this. You know, you and NPR are the only radio people who have been talking about it, and I got to give you a lot of credit. Without you, I don't know where anyone would be, because we wouldn't have this kind of information. The reason we did this press conference with Keystone Progress in Harrisburg today is because we wanted to force the press to cover it. I think we'll see some stories tomorrow, but that's not going to be enough. Keystone Progress and Penn Action are going to do a joint petition drive. We'll be sending emails out to our lists tomorrow morning. If you're not on your list, you go to keystoneprogress.org or pennaction.org. You'll be able to sign that petition. We'll probably do a petition delivery to Corbett next week when we get, you know, 5,000 signatures or so. We're going to stay on this. We're going to organize people. I don't know whether we can stop it, but we are not going to let them do this without the people of Pennsylvania knowing whose side Tom Corbett is on.
Especially
when
you look
at our side.
Especially when you look at the fact that just the other day, 42,000 people were kicked off of the adult basic insurance rolls, mm-hmm. basically left off on their own. And I don't want to sound extreme, but to die quite possibly, because they don't have adequate insurance. And again, as I've talked about on this program, I think that single move is going to cost us more in the long run, a very short-sighted decision by this governor. And you couple that with this massive tax handout, and I guess it shows where the priorities are.
Yeah, I mean, we know that a person dies every other day, sometimes two every other day in Pennsylvania, because they don't have health insurance. There's no question that some people are going to die because they cut off adult basic. And to keep adult basic going is only like $160 million a year. There's way more than enough in this tax cut to keep adult basic going. Corbett did not lift a finger, even though he promised. And, you know, I was one of the people who were after him when he was running for governor. And adult basic was threatened, and we did some demonstrations, and we called his office and said, will you agree with Dan Honorato and keep adult basic going? He promised to do it. He's already broken that promise. But the promises he's made to the big corporate donors who gave him so much in campaign contributions, he's accelerated those promises. He said he wasn't going to cut the corporate tax rate for a couple of years. He's figured out a way to do it in the third month in office. Those are the promises he keeps.
The other promises.
You forget.
He keeps the promises to the people who keep funding his campaigns and who keep putting money in the coffers. Those of us who are struggling to make ends meet, well, I guess we know what we get.
Yeah, you know, it's almost hard to be too radical about this. I mean, we really are in a state right now where the question is, what kind of government are we going to have? Are we going to keep having a Commonwealth in which government serves the interests of everyone? Or are we going to have a joint stock company of government for, by, and of the corporate elite? It's looking that this governor thinks he works for basically half of 1% of the population of Pennsylvania.
Again, you know, I go back to what they've always said. You know, I want politicians to work for the people. And I say that, that he is working for the people who have who funded his campaign and who have, you know, who've backed him. The rest of us, well, tough luck, buddy.
Yeah, he may look like a nice grandfatherly guy, but he's not one of your grandfather's Republicans. He is a radical right-wing Republican who has an agenda totally out of keeping with what the huge majority of Pennsylvanians need and want.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Mark Steer, penaction.org is the website. We'll put a link up on our site at thericksmithshow.com so you can be part of it. Mark, keep up the fight. I appreciate the work you guys do, and please come back anytime to fill us in and keep us informed.
Well, thanks very much, Rick. It's good to be here, and it's great that you're around to keep people informed about what's going on.
Thanks so much, Mark. Talk to you real soon. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
By gollies, America is still an exporting powerhouse. In fact, our corporate chieftains have made us number one in exporting America's most precious goods. Our jobs, factories, technologies, and middle-class opportunities. With unemployment and underemployment devastating millions of families in our country, perhaps you've assumed that U.S. corporations aren't hiring these days. Nonsense. They added 1.4 million jobs last year alone. Overseas. For example, more than half Caterpillar's new hires in 2010 were in foreign countries. Many more of this giant's jobs are headed offshore in the near future, for Caterpillar, which was once an iconic American brand, has recently invested in three new plants in China. It'll not only manufacture tractors and bulldozers there, but it'll also begin to ship its design work and technology development jobs to China. Likewise, DuPont, once proud of its U.S. workforce, has slashed its number of American employees in recent years while increasing its Asia-Pacific workforce by more than half. Indeed, DuPont no longer considers itself American. We're a global player, sniffs its chief innovation officer. Such homemade brands as Coca-Cola, Dell, and IBM are also among the multitude of corporations abandoning our shores and our middle class. Of course, they still keep their well-appointed headquarters here so the corporation and top executives continue enjoying all that America has to offer. Calvin Coolidge once asserted that what's good for business is good for America. That was myopic enough, but today's narcissistic CEOs are even more self-serving, declaring that what's good for business is good for business. America be damned. This is Jim Hightower saying, if we're to have a united society, America cannot tolerate such raw selfishness by the privileged few. We can have a plutocracy or a democracy, but not both.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said yesterday that House Republican spending plan would likely cost a couple of 100,000 jobs, a number he called not trivial. Now, remember, these were the people who were supposed to be the job creators. Remember, if we had Republicans in power, they were going to create jobs. Remember that? It was all about the jobs. show me one piece of legislation, show me one thing that they have done that has moved us in the direction of creating jobs, not destroying them or tearing down the conditions. Just amazing stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Bob on line, too. How are we doing tonight, Bob?
We're doing good here in Illinois. So I actually got off the phone with Mark Rowan, and he stated to me that at 5:30 his power was shut off to his equipment, and they were actually stuck up on the first floor and couldn't get down to where the action was going on, down to the bottom floor, until after that point in time, and they just took their laptop and walked down there amongst them until their battery went dead somewhere around 7:30.
Yeah, we were watching some of the stream, an amazing event, and like I was saying at the beginning, I hope it's not something that turns violent. I'm hoping that, that Walker's people didn't throw someone in there to, you know, to just to cause a little incident to make things go awry. But at the end of the day, still people sitting in their capital and having their voice heard, Bob.
Yes, I believe that. Well, actually, yesterday I was told that Scott Walker had hired DCI security to come in, and they're walking around out there with plain clothes.
Nice. He's basically hiring the Pinkertons of old.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I find it amazing that, you know, here it's, we're going on 3 weeks of protesting. Everything's been peaceful up until now. And then yesterday I find out that they've hired this DCI. And now all of a sudden they found live ammunition.
Like I said at the beginning, I don't believe it for a second, and I don't put it past this scumbag to pull a stunt like that.
Yeah. But other than that, Mark was in good spirits with everything that transpired today. He's been kind of chomping at the bit to get back in there up until now.
Well, good. And I'm glad he got the press credentials. I hope it worked out for him.
But the restraining order came back. Everybody has to leave the building tonight. That was the judge's order. And when he left the building, it sounded like the protesters were going to leave peacefully and not make it so that the police have to arrest them. And then also the judge's order was that the doors will be back open at 8 a.m. in the morning, and if they are not, Governor Walker will be held in contempt of court.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? See him locked up behind bars.
Yeah, you know, after all, to me, he's the guy that's created the whole thing anyway.
Man, I cannot wait for them, for the people of Wisconsin to get rid of him.
Yeah, I think sooner the better that they start recalling people. I live in Illinois, so, you know, I'm hoping this stuff doesn't happen in Illinois. But, you know, I think I can speak for a lot of people here. We're fed up, you know, being hammered on every little corner.
That's why we've got to organize. We've got to come together and look in large numbers. The 62% of us solidly in the working class. If we come together and stand united, we cannot be defeated.
Yes, exactly. You know, and it doesn't really matter what party that they're affiliated with. You know, if you're not working for the people that elected you, you're not going to be in office very long.
Yep. Excellent point. Excellent point, Bob. I appreciate the call, brother. I appreciate the update as well.
Yeah, and actually, there's two buses headed there for a personal vehicle. I'm hoping to be there Saturday and Sunday to help out. Hopefully we'll, I've got some equipment that may come in handy with the streaming and everything.
Good for you.
And, hopefully, we get it settled in Wisconsin before it comes to Illinois.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it. If they can stop it there in Wisconsin, maybe it doesn't come to Illinois or Ohio or Missouri or any of the number of free states left. Thanks again, Bob. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We'll talk at you later.
All righty. Yeah, and look, I look at what's going on there, and it's remarkable. And
things, unfortunately, seem to be deteriorating. The last I heard, this was a little bit after 8 o'clock before I left the house, Rick. They were interviewing one of the Democrats who had reached out to the Republican senators. And he said, we were doing that in hopes of, you know, behind the scenes, coming to common ground with the governor. And all the governor seems to want to do is go on TV and say, well, you know, we have some Democrats here that really want to come here, but they're being blackballed into to not coming forward. And he said, the Democrats said, look, we can't keep doing it. We're going to stop meeting with the Republicans if the governor is going to keep doing this. And then you see where the Senate has declared them in contempt of the Senate. And they want the police to go out and arrest them with or without violence. You know, and the head of the police association said, look, we can't go across the border. It's illegal. I mean, things are getting bizarre. I hope they don't turn violent. That what you said about, some bulleting found. I mean, isn't that just convenient? Isn't that just convenient?
Isn't that special?
He's getting desperate. I think the pressure is getting to him. I really do. And, I just hope he doesn't become that desperate that it becomes a violent situation for everybody involved.
I hope that they don't start something. I hope that there isn't someone put in the crowd by the governor or the Koch brothers or whoever to light that spark. The phone call, perfectly capable of doing that, they are. In fact, when he said that, well, we thought of that. Right there, sold it for me. Generally, I love crazy, but I do think it is really getting out of control right now. But you look in Washington, a report came out that the leader of Tea Party Nation yesterday declared that House Speaker John Boehner looks like a fool, according to his website, and should be defeated in a primary, tearing into him for not pushing for larger budget cuts, more aggressive budget cuts. Judson Phillips wrote on the Tea Party Nation's website, there is no way to put this. The Tea Party movement should find a candidate to run against John Boehner in 2012 and should set a goal to defeat him in a primary, the sitting Speaker House of Representatives. Basically because, when they came out with their grand pledge, they said they were going to cut $100 billion from the budget. And this is what he says early on, according to the website. The GOP promised to cut $100 billion from the budget. The Republicans in the House quickly went squishy on that and had to be cajoled into cutting only $61 billion. He continued by saying, now John Boehner is saying when the Senate comes back and they start negotiating with dingy Harry Reid, who doesn't want to make any cuts, the $61 billion figure is not safe. So you look at the crazy Tea Party people who, again, they've got this my way or the highway mentality going on there. Phillips finished up by saying Charlie Sheen is now making more sense than John Boehner, which, again, one of those really outrageous things to say out there. But I love watching the Republican Party fall apart. I mean, because they are absolutely, and we said this was going to happen. When crazy comes to town, crazy tears everything up. And that's what they're doing. They're eating themselves from within. And I don't think Bonner's going to know how to handle it. He's not the hammer. He's not Tom DeLay. And I don't even know that DeLay could handle this. That's how out of control the Republicans have gotten. And one last thing before we take a break. This whole thing in Wisconsin, for one group of people, the folks at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, there was some question, I guess, early on whether the union was going to win the vote there, the American Federation of Teachers in Wisconsin. Well, they had a union vote, and it was voted on 249-37, 87% turnout, and there will be a union for the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, even as Scott Walker pulls his nonsense. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I've never been on welfare. That's one place I'll be working. As long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern. Sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just applied for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open board right outside my door. There's men in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends me illegals home, who's gonna build the wall?
That's the question. Who's gonna build the big wall? Seems like we're not gonna need it though. Don't need the big wall. This afternoon in a joint White House press conference with Mexico's President Felipe Calderon, Obama announced that the two countries have now struck a deal that they're going to open U.S. highways to Mexican trucks. According to the BBC, Obama said the U.S. and Mexico had found a clear path to resolving the issue that has clouded diplomatic relations for the two free trade partners for 20 years now. The president said the proposal would head to Congress next for approval. No details as of yet. Look, at the end of this, and I've said it from the beginning, I'm dead set against opening up the borders to the Mexican trucks. Until we have a wage structure that is similar, until we have a regulatory system that is similar, until our drivers can go into Mexico and feel safe that they're not going to be hijacked, that they're not going to be ripped off, that they're not going to be, and that's just by the police, mind you. That's not by the drug cartels or anything else. That's just by the police. I just don't see any sense in having this happen, especially now when we're in the middle of a major economic downturn. The recession, in my boat, isn't over. We don't have full employment yet. We can't afford more job losses. And that's what this is going to do. And in more ways than I think people think. It's not just the drivers that are going to lose their jobs. I do believe we're going to see warehousing jobs and we're going to see more manufacturing leave. I see big trouble. And I think the Teamsters have been in front of this from a different perspective, you know, about conditions and safety and all of that. Wage, I think, are extremely important in this. But at the end of the day, folks, you and I don't seem to matter. Our wishes don't matter. And this is another one of those things where it should have been renegotiated. We should have gone back and said, you know what? The Europeans couldn't get it done for 50 years. And they're still having problems with their cross-border trucking. I'm telling you, this is a massive, major mistake. And again, you know, this is one of those moments in history where Democratic voters, people like me, look at a Democratic president and say, exactly what in the heck are you thinking? Clinton signed this giant chocolate covered turd, and now you've got Obama pushing it through. It's just amazing, Jake. Just
it's frustrating on several levels. First of all, you mentioned Mexico. I mean, the truth is, let's be honest, let's not sugarcoat. To a large degree, that country is at war with itself. There is a war there. The government isn't strong enough. You have some very wealthy, powerful, well-armed drug cartels. There's certain parts of Mexico that the Mexican government, all truth, if the truth be known, that don't have jurisdiction. The drug cartel does. So how can our president, with a straight face, say that this is an even deal?
Well, what this is more pandering to big business. This is more sucking up to corporate America because they want it. You know, Mexico was smart in all this. You got to give them credit. They knew which buttons to push. They knew where the powers to be are. They went after the agriculture. They went after the grapes in California and the potatoes in Wisconsin. And they put tariffs on a lot of our agricultural goods. Kind of tighten the screws a little bit. And what do those folks do? They run to their congressmen. They run to their senators. So you had Democrats and Republicans who were pushing the president to move on this. And I'm telling you, we should have taken a different approach. Which would have said, you know what? Then we just scrap the whole thing. Because if I've got to get basically strip searched to go on an airplane, yeah, we're going to open the border up and say, yeah, go on, roll right on through. Go ahead, yeah. With some halfway veiled idea that, oh, we're going to scan the containers and, oh, we'll have some oversight. Yeah, I know how that oversight works. And in the first year, oh yeah, we're going to have oversight. We're going to have gung-ho people who are, yeah, we're going to check every truck. We're going to check every driver. And the second year, maybe we'll check 90%. And the third year, fourth year down the road, you're going, everything's fine. It's an open border. We're one big happy country. Is that what we want? I mean, really stop and think about what this means. And I know, Rick, you sound like the right wing. I do have some nationalistic tendencies. I do think that the people who work in this country should make a reasonable living, a middle-class existence. And, you know, in my heart, trucking is, you know, I was in the trucking industry over 20 years. I do have a place for that. I hate to see anybody lose their job, but this is going to cost thousands of Americans their jobs. This is going to, and understand what the rationale for this is. The way the system is set up right now, you've got Mexican drivers who bring the loads across into the U.S., into the 20-mile trade zone. They drop the loads off. Things are transferred around, put onto trucks, and sent out from there. American drivers pick them up and take them. They're going to streamline all that. So the Mexican guy who goes back and forth, the drayage driver, he's going to lose his job. Now, the people who used to work in the transfer companies, shifting things around, they're all going to lose their jobs. The American driver who used to take that stuff everywhere else, he's going to lose his job. You're going to have one guy coming across the Mexican border, and he's going to take his load directly to where it has to go. Now, if that means 2, 3, 4 stops, that's what it means. Now, supposedly what they tell us is, and with the Canadians, we've been able to make sure that it doesn't happen. Why? Because they're actually paid better than we are. So it's in their best interest to police this stuff. They're saying that, well, they're only supposed to go to one location, and they go home. Go to wherever they have freight for, and then go home. They're not supposed to make deliveries point A to point B in the U.S. They're supposed to start in Mexico and in the U.S. and go back. And that may be the case on the short term. But over the long haul, 5, 10, 15 years, I do believe you're going to see that kind of cheating because the incentive is going to be there. A massive incentive when you're paying people percentages of the wage. Understand, you know, here in this country, the basic owner-operator here makes about $1 a mile. in Mexico, you're talking somewhere between 14 and 17 cents a mile. If you own a company, there's an incentive there for you. There's an absolute incentive. And I just don't think you can have those, I don't think you can have those, that wide of a difference between two workers, because that tears down conditions and it ruins it. I got to be honest, you're not going to have any Americans in the trucking industry anymore. And that, my friends, is a bad thing. And the other part of this is, you know, I hear this call for, you know, we spent billions of dollars trying to erect barriers on the border. We built a big fence. We've got a camera eye. We've got sensors. We've got we've got it all on the border. Doesn't work, but we've got it there. And now we're just going to open a big gaping hole and say, sure, come on, brother, roll it on in. What sense, again, does that make? Is that good foreign policy? Well, maybe if you're the Mexicans, maybe if you're Felipe Calderon, that's a good thing because you're getting your people back to work. But at a time when we can ill afford to lose jobs. Now, every truck driver that gets laid off, so think about this the other way, Jake, because the Republicans fought the Trade Act and they fought the assistance for unemployment, for people who get laid off due to trade policies.
Retraining.
So all of those programs that used to be in place for those people who lose their job through bad trade policy, no more. They're screwed. So every truck driver that loses his job going forward, hey, tough luck, buddy. Those Republicans that you put into the office, they just stuck it to you. And if you don't think this is big, big trouble, you wait, because the owner operators, you're the first to go. Because most of my owner-operator friends, they're at such razor-thin margins now, they're basically starving in their trucks. They can't absorb several months of lower wages, especially as this summer comes around and fuel prices are going to shoot through the roof. So the American trucking industry is in big, big trouble now. And I know, it's just a small portion of the industry. These are the assurances that we're getting. They're just a small portion of the industry. You know, the stuff coming right from Mexico right to the U.S. And then they go back. Like I said, over 5, 6, 10 years, you're going to see the enforcement of that go away. Because our Republican friends, they don't believe in accountability. They don't believe in oversight. They don't believe in regulatory enforcement. So if nobody's watching, what's going to stop them from cheating? And I would love to hear my truck driver friends. This is an interesting question. Would you, with your shiny bumpers and your nice big 18-wheeler, you taking that down into Mexico? And how much would it cost to get you to take a load in there? Would you work for 17 cents a mile? I don't think you would. In fact, none of my owner-operator friends would. They don't even like going to Texas. So it'll be an interesting couple of months as we open up the border. And look, I've been saying it's got to happen. It's going to happen. The forces in its favor have been too strong. You know, I guess I can give the president credit for holding off this long. But at the end of the day, it's going to cost us thousands of jobs, and it's going to add to our unemployment rolls. And for those who do, like I said, those who do lose their jobs, there's not going to be any help for you. And that is the Republican legacy. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Professor Richard Wolff, he's a professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, also the guy who brought you Capitalism Hits the Fan. Really an excellent video worth checking out. We're right back after this.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Amazing grace, how sweet the
Wisconsin Senate Republicans passed a resolution Thursday calling on police to take state Senate Democrats into custody for contempt of the Senate. It's not an arrest warrant and doesn't come from a judge. The Wisconsin Democrats say they didn't flinch at the news and are staying put in Illinois in defense of collective bargaining for public workers. The Wisconsin Professional Police Association slammed the Republican action, saying using forcible detention of elected officials because they won't allow you to dictate with a free hand is an unreasonable abuse of police power and is insanely wrong. The Wisconsin Capitol remained locked down Thursday as a court hearing continued to win open public access again. Even as a reporter, I had a hard time getting in on Thursday. This is what getting in sounded like. Hi.
Hi.
Would you like to get into the building, please?
On the opposite side is the entrance.
There's only one entrance open?
The entrance is on the opposite side.
Could you explain to us why the judge's order is not being honored and all doors open to the public? I mean... Gayla Olson of Black Earth, Wisconsin, describes what it was like once she managed to finally get into the Capitol building.
We had four police officers around us, okay? Four police officers, and then we had to be escorted by two police officers just to get out of the building. It was like a police state.
Everywhere you go in this Capitol now, police are here and the hallways are empty. Just about 100 protesters in the rotunda downstairs pounding on a drum. Police everywhere asking for IDs. This is not the people's house anymore in the Wisconsin tradition of how it normally is here. And people are gathered outside, hundreds of them, in the cold, and they're angry about this. And they are demanding to be let inside as they express their passionate disapproval of the lockdown of the people's house. Inside, about 100 demonstrators are still here who have been spending the night here. And right now there's a drum circle going on in the Capitol Rotunda here in Madison, keeping the drumbeat of this protest, this pro-worker protest, alive here in Madison, Wisconsin. Jessica Eanes is one of the roughly 100 protesters still sleeping overnight in Wisconsin's capital. She expects the court soon to order the doors open to the public.
Hope that they would actually open the doors, because it would just break my heart if the Department of Administration put themselves in contempt of court.
Democratic state lawmakers like Representative Fred Clark again set up their desks outside Thursday to protest the lockdown.
As long as the building remains effectively in a lockdown, as long as that's the case, we'll come out here to allow those people to exercise their right to speak with their representatives.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know what we're fighting for. At least I know what they're fighting for in Wisconsin. The right to have a voice on the job. The right to have a voice. Earlier tonight, a number of folks rushed into the Capitol. There's a little tension there. They've all exited the Capitol. It is closed, as I understand right now, that they have just left. But I'll guarantee you, first thing in the morning, I'll guarantee you there are going to be a couple of thousand people waiting at the door for when they open it up. Because after all, it is their house. The question is, how did we get into this mess? How did we get into a situation where we have such insanity sitting in the governor's mansions, such insanity in the halls of power? Our good friend Richard Wolff, a professor emeritus at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, wrote an excellent piece on how bad we've been soaked by the rich, how the rich have soaked the rest of us. And he lays out the theft of our democracy with clarity and accuracy. He's also the guy on the film Capitalism Hits the Fan, and I think it's really worth checking out. Professor Wolff, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
You know, I look at what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio and in many other states, just another assault on the working class of this country, and for the most part, done with our own money.
Absolutely. It's a amazing saga for those of us that look at this as professors of economics, which is what I've done all my life. It is really an amazing display in which an economic system that has broken down mostly through speculations of large corporations and the richest folks among us, is then threatening everybody. The government is called in to bail out the biggest banks in the country, General Motors, the biggest corporations in the United States. It borrows a ton of money to do that because it is unable or afraid to tax corporations and the rich. And then, having borrowed the money, finding itself in a jam because of the debts it's run up, does it finally go and tax the rich? Does it finally go and deal with the corporations who've gotten away with literally financial murder? No. It decides that the problem to be solved is to take away from public employees not only wages, salaries, and benefits, but to take away from them the right to bargain with their employer about the conditions of their job. It is an amazing spectacle in which you keep pounding, you keep putting the burden of an economic crisis on those who had the least to do with bringing it about, those who have gotten the least portion of the government's efforts to fix it, and now are being asked to take it really on the chin to pay yet again another cost, not only unemployment, not only foreclosed homes, but now cut public services and a rising unemployment as we lay off public employees. I mean, people will look back on this as a period of time of real, to use your words from the beginning of this hour, insanity. And it's really not an exaggeration to say so.
Well, I go back to the lame duck session last year, where in order to extend unemployment benefits for people who had their jobs taken from them for no fault of their own, but for that little bit of extension for unemployment, that little bit of a lifeline for them, we had to give away not just a pound of flesh, but all the flesh, the massive handout to the top 2%, not to mention the estate tax.
Right. It's in this article that I just published that it has gotten, I am happy to say, a lot of attention, more than I foresaw, all I set out to do was to show the reader what has happened over the last half century to the income tax in the United States. And I point out, and this apparently shocked people because I guess it's not well known, that in the 1950s and 60s, the top income bracket in the United States, the top 5 to 10% of our people, paid on the upper scale of their income, everything they earned over, say, $100,000, 91%.
Yep, during that good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower.
Exactly. 91%. What does that mean? It means that every dollar the rich people earn, say over the top bracket, say $100,000 or whatever it was, 91 cents out of every dollar above that, they had to give to Uncle Sam. They kept 9 cents. Even as late as the 1960s and 70s, it was over 70%. 70 cents out of every dollar at the top you had to pay. And why was that done? It was argued that because of the war, the Second World War, it was important for corporations and rich people to pay into the government. That was what they were asked to do as part of their commitment to be part of this country. And it was felt after the war that to avoid slipping back into a depression, they would need to pay. The rich are the most able to pay. The rich are the ones who have done well in the last 30 years, it was argued, and so they are the ones that are obligated to pay a large share according to their ability. After it was 91%, and after it was 71%, what is it today? Answer, 35%. So the people at the top have experienced a staggering cut in their obligation for the federal government. So there's no mystery why government is strapped for money. There's no mystery at all. It has cut the taxes above all, both on corporations and the richest Americans. And here's the irony if you understand this. The government, because it doesn't tax the rich, it is forced to run deficits, to borrow the money.
Yep.
But here's what people don't recall. When the government goes to borrow the money, who do they borrow the money from?
From the rich.
Exactly. So here's the joke. Because the government doesn't tax the rich not only escape having to pay taxes, but they get the other side of the coin as well. They get to take the money the government didn't tax, lend it to the government, which has to not only pay the money back, but pay them interest for the meanwhile as the government holds it. This is an astonishing way to ask the wealthy to contribute to a, at a time either of warfare, as in World War II, or now a time of national economic crisis. And it is really dishonest to talk about the government doesn't have the money to provide public services, or the government doesn't have the money to maintain decent working conditions for public employees. The only reason it doesn't have the money is that it was slavishly providing for both corporations and the richest Americans one tax cut after another, and that's the reason. And the most amazing thing, I don't mean to talk too long, but the most amazing thing is that our political representatives are so deep in the pockets of those who have done the best that we're currently having a debate between Republicans and Democrats which seems mainly focused on how big the cuts should be and who exactly should get cut. Nobody is raising the question that our own history as a nation really puts before us, which is, why in the world do we not go back to the kinds of upper income bracket tax rates that were once the norm in this country for decade upon decade? If we just went back to the way it was in the 60s and 70s for the rich, major funding for the government would become available without deficits, without borrowing, without debts for our children to have to pay. And the fact that it isn't even discussed, that everyone from President Obama on down acts as though a budget is a one-sided thing which you solve the problems of by cutting rather than by raising revenue from those who've gotten out of paying, that's a testimony to who calls the shots in this country, if I ever saw one.
Well, if you look at the phone call in Wisconsin, you know, the guy believed it was David Koch on the line, and you don't turn down a phone call from a billionaire.
That's right. And, but, you know, the bottom line is, after all we've said and done, as long as you leave the bulk of the profits in our society, the excess of output over what you have to pay to replace the tools and equipment used up and to pay the workers' wages, that thing we call profit, if you leave that in the hands of basically 500 or 600 mega corporations, it doesn't take rocket science to understand those folks use a portion of that money to make sure they stay in that privileged position, to give the contributions to the politicians, to set up the think tanks that flood the airwaves with a particular way of looking at the country, to pay for the army of lobbyists that do half the work on Capitol Hill. They're not stupid. They know they have to maintain these conditions to keep themselves in that situation.
Yep.
And we're not going to prevail against them so long as we leave them with the resources to do that.
You know, I'm thinking back to what you talked about a second ago about, you know, about all this money that we've handed over to, we've allowed the wealthy to take, and then us borrowing it back from them, and something even more perverted than that scenario that you laid out, the interest that we pay the very wealthy for the privilege of using, the money, they only pay 15% tax on, because that's capital gains tax. And again, you know, you go back to this idea that a guy swinging a hammer and going up and working day after day, punching a clock, pays much more than that, to me, is much more perverted and much more disgusting.
Yeah, it ought to be, you know, it ought to be a basic question of fairness, of ethics, of morality. You say to a human being in this country, a man or a woman, go to work, spend, you know, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, put your brain to work, put your muscles to work. And then the government's going to come and tax you at 10, 20, 30, 40%. And then it says to people who make capital gains, and let's remember what the basic component of capital gains is. It's when you buy a share of stock most of the time and say you pay 10 bucks, and you're fortunate that a little bit later, a year or a half a year, whatever it is, you can sell the same share of stock for $20 or $30. The difference between what you paid and what you got, that's most of what we call capital gain.
Correct.
It doesn't involve you in any labor. It doesn't involve you in the sweat of your brow or the extension of your brain or muscle. It's really a question of hustling in a market. It is something only done in a significant way by a tiny minority of our people who have enough money for this to be a significant part of their income. And then the government says you don't have to pay the 20 to 30 to 40%. The current capital gains rate is 15%. It's just a handout, and that's literally what it is, to the rich. It says that you, if you're rich enough to have stocks and bonds and you make money off of them, we won't tax you the way we tax the person, you know, who's working for a living and expending his brains and his muscle. That, on a prima facie case, that is not fair. That is not reasonable. And at a time when we're in a national crisis, with 10% of our people unemployed, with more than a million people losing their homes every year, it goes beyond unfair and becomes downright obscene in the grossness of the situation. And they won that, you know. It wasn't always that way. We used to charge on capital gains a much higher rate.
Absolutely, which I wish we'd go back to.
Exactly. That's why I explain to people, we're not asking many of us for some radical new departure in our tax system, although heaven knows there's arguments for that. All we're saying is go back to what it was, and then a large part of the so-called lack of resources in the hands of the government would disappear literally overnight. There's another part of it that's worth mentioning, too.
Can we pick that up on the other side of the break?
Sure.
Can you stick around for a break?
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you've got a question for Professor Wolf, right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5 to even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the new dark ages.
Yeah, and welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Professor Richard Wolf, Professor of Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Check out his piece, Capitalism Hits the Fan. Well worth the couple of minutes that it takes. Really lays this stuff out. And you might want to read his piece, How the Rich Soaked the Rest of Us. Professor, I appreciate you sticking around through the break.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I wanted to address a question. When conservative folks and business spokesmen and people who are on the side of the rich, when they try to justify the tax breaks they've gotten, the tax cuts they've enjoyed, they say the following sort of thing. You have to give low taxes to corporations. You have to give low taxes to the rich, because then the rich and the corporations will spend that money that they save in taxes by investing and producing jobs. This is a wonderful story. It just isn't true.
Oh, no, I think it is. I think it is, Professor Wolf. I think it's absolutely true. They take all that money that we've given them here in the U.S., and they create jobs in places like China and India.
Exactly. And it's worse than that because, you know, it's very expensive for a lot of reasons to close a factory or an office or a warehouse in the United States and reorganize your traffic and your routes to locate that in another country. What a corporation is free to do and what rich people are free to do with their investments is spend them to close jobs here, to end them, to move them to another part of the world where they can make more profits. But here's a second example of what particularly has been done by wealthy people and big corporations with the money they saved from taxes over the last 2 years. Because our economy is not doing well, they haven't invested in more jobs in this country because so many Americans are unemployed and are losing their homes, are not about to spend large sums of money. So here's what they've done to make a lot of money. They've speculated. They've bought up particularly oil, gas, and a number of the basic foods around the world, which is why in a time when very few prices are rising, the price of oil has gone crazy, the price of corn and of wheat and of many other food items. That's a speculative way of using your money. The rich buy these products in order to hope that they will go up and that they'll realize those capital gains. The result for us is that we're all going to be spending $3.50 to $4 a gallon for the gasoline and for our cars this summer, and we're going to face rising food prices for the rest of this year. In many parts of the world, including those events in Egypt and Tunisia we saw a few weeks ago, those are food riots. Those are people who can't get enough to eat once the prices of food are driven up. But one of the reasons those prices are going up is speculation on the part of wealthy people who don't have to pay taxes and are using that money for those kinds of purposes. You need to remember that if you don't tax the rich and if you don't tax the corporations, they have money and there's no guarantee and there is no obligation on them to use that money in a socially useful purpose, certainly not to make jobs here in the United States. And therefore, it is a bizarre argument to say we keep after giving them tax cuts because of the nice things they might do. And it's even more amazing to make that argument here over the last 2 or 3 years, but not only haven't they done that, which is why we have such horrible unemployment, but they've actually done things that damage the working class in terms of the high prices for food and fuel.
Not to mention putting people like Scott Walker into office and beating down unions. Can you take a quick phone call? You mind?
Absolutely, no problem.
I got Andy on line two. How are we doing tonight, Andy? You got a question for Professor Wolf?
Yeah, I sure do, Rick. Professor Wolf, I've heard you talk before, and you do a great job, but I disagree with you on one point you make. You've said that World War II got us out of the Great Depression, and I believe Roosevelt got us out of the Great Depression, and my family benefited greatly from Mr. Roosevelt. The unemployment rate before December 2nd, 1941 was almost hitting 8%. I mean, that in itself is a great number. The GDP numbers, the gross domestic product, was over in positive territory in 1938 on. And by 1941, we were almost hitting double-digit GDP numbers. I mean, big numbers that you don't see in these days. The economy was booming before we got into World War II. And I believe Roosevelt's policies and him putting people to work and him really gassing the economy with funds coming from workers, really got us out of the Great Depression, not World War II.
Well, let me respond. Part of this is not a disagreement between us. I certainly am the first one to say that President Roosevelt was an extraordinarily courageous fellow. He wasn't when he ran for president the first time. He ran on a balanced budget program, really quite conservative. But after 2 or 3 years of watching the worst collapse of capitalism we've ever had, with unemployment getting up to 25% in 1933, he had the wisdom, as well as the pressure from the CIO, to change his politics and to change them very drastically. And he went on the radio in a very famous speech, and he said to the American people something which no president since has had the courage to say. If the private sector, Roosevelt said, is either unable or unwilling to provide decent jobs for millions of American men and women who want to work, then there's no alternative but to have us in the government do that. Between 1934 and 1941, and this is what you're talking about, Roosevelt's government created 11 million federal jobs and filled them with the unemployed of the United States. And he got the unemployment rate way down between 1933, when it peaked, and 1937, when it got to about as low as he was able to get it. Then what happened to him? And I think here we can see what our disagreement, or perhaps it isn't even a disagreement, comes to. Then he got in trouble with the Republicans and the conservatives, who got very frightened by what he was doing, with millions of Americans working for the federal government, getting good jobs, having some say on the job. Private employers were getting very nervous that they would never be able to treat their workers the way they had, because the government was, in effect, a competitor and doing a better job in how it treated workers. So they began to fight in many of the ways and using many of the arguments you'll hear from conservatives, both Republican and Democrat, these days. Roosevelt was in a jam, and the economy began to go down again shortly after 1937, into 38 and 39. That frightened everybody. And it is my humble opinion, you know, looking at the historical facts, I can't read Roosevelt's mind, but I think what he was facing was the fact that with the opposition of the business community mounting, it would be very hard for him, even with his popularity, to get the kind of programs through the Congress simply on the grounds of helping millions of Americans, which he'd been doing. The one thing that would unite the United States behind the program of full employment, getting rid of the remaining 8 or 9% that you still had then, and that's millions of people, would be something that every American would kind of accept as an urgent necessity. And war was that. I'm not saying that that's why we had the war, but I think the war was able to solve a problem which we should have, as a nation, been able to solve without a war. We should have been able to say it's worth it to put people to work for the dignity, for the income, for the output we can all have if everybody's working. But most of the time in our society, the forces of conservatism and reaction make that very, very hard, short of a national emergency, and the war did provide it. So I think we agree on most of it. I just think it looked as though then, and that's a lesson for us now, that just using the issue of economic full employment is not sufficient in our society to overcome the resistance of business and the rich who don't want to pay for it, who don't want to allow it, who like to give speeches about the importance of competition, but they're afraid of government competition, and not for reasons of fairness, but for reasons that they will not be able to do what they've done in the past if the government is, in fact, pressed by people to treat workers appropriately.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Is that good enough for you, Andy?
Well, I think, you, like the professor says, we're in a repeat situation of almost 1937. All you hear from the Republicans is deficit, deficit,
right.
Deficit, and President Not So Sure will not go to bat for the working man and create the jobs that need to be created and do the thing. There are certainly things we could do to create jobs, and he will not do it, and he will not do what Roosevelt did and really stick it to the economic royalists and tell them this is the way it's going to be. He just won't do it.
Yeah, he hasn't been willing to do it, but not to defend him, but let me say one thing. One of the things that made Roosevelt change his politics and stand up to do the things you want, and I agree with you, Obama to do, is that he had, in those years, the most impressive unionizing movement the United States had ever seen in the CIO. Millions of workers in our basic industries, steel, auto, rubber, and all the rest, were joining unions in unprecedented numbers. And they were telling Roosevelt, we are the big movement of our time. You better listen to us. We are the people. We are organized. We're raising the money that can make political change happen. And not only that, in those days we had strong socialist and communist parties, and whatever else you may think about them, together with the CIO, they were a real pressure on the president then to do these sorts of things. Obama doesn't have that. We have a labor movement that has been declining for a long time. We don't even have any political parties of that kind anymore in America for all practical purposes. So Mr. Obama is not under the kind of pressure. He's worried about things called tea parties, not worried until recently, and that's why the stuff in Wisconsin is so important. But it's the first time we're beginning to see the kind of mobilization that can make a difference and change the behavior of an Obama, just as it did with Roosevelt back in the 30s.
Yep. Is that good enough? Does that answer your question, Andy?
What we got to do is get some of those service sector jobs unionized. We got to get, you know, the labor movement rocking and rolling. Like you
Absolutely.
Said, I'm willing to be an organizer. No, I've been in the SEIU in the past. It can be done, and we got to break up these big corporations. We need the Sherman Antitrust Act back to create more jobs. We need to get rid of NAFTA and GATT. We have to stop outsourcing jobs. I mean, these are definitely got to stop the H-1 visa programs. Bring back the tariff system. There's all these things we could do that would.
That's right, and they would. And between that and the ecological issues we have in this country, we got more than enough work to be done. We have enormous social needs. We have millions of people wanting a job. Our capacity utilization rate, that's that number the government keeps to give a sense of how much of our factory space and machines and office space is being used. It's currently 75%. That means a quarter of our industrial capacity is sitting, you know, gathering rust and dust instead of being used. We have the people who want the jobs. We have the raw material, the machines, and the space to do it. And we have unmet social needs. It's a terrible economic system that can't put those things together, and that's what we need, you know, the United States to do. But I'm very hopeful, frankly. These things in Wisconsin, for me, represent something which, at least in my up-feeling moments, might be the beginning of the kind of movement of working people that we saw with the CIO. It took some years of the Great Depression before people really understood what they were in for. And when the governor of Wisconsin wants to take away long struggled for union rights for basic ability to bargain with your employer, I think you see what kind of an agenda is being pushed in regard to working people in America. And I think it frightened people. I noticed that 2 days ago, the New York Times was forced, and I think it was the force of what happened in Wisconsin, to undertake a poll across the United States and put the results on the front page
yep.
of the New York Times, and it basically showed pretty clearly that an outstanding majority of Americans in all walks of life believe that the public employees have every right to have collective bargaining, have their own union, and do as well as they can in a tough working environment bargaining with their employer. And I think, you know, If we had a politics that was responsive to what people believe, it would be an open and shut case what ought to happen, not only in Wisconsin, but look at what they're doing in Ohio and so on.
Right, exactly. I got to take a quick break here. Can you stick around for a little bit longer?
Sure.
I want to talk about how do we fix the problems. What are the answers to moving forward? We're going to take a quick break right back after this with Professor Richard Wolff.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
By gollies, America is still an exporting powerhouse. In fact, our corporate chieftains have made us number one in exporting America's most precious goods, our jobs, factories, technologies, and middle-class opportunities. With unemployment and underemployment devastating millions of families in our country, perhaps you've assumed that U.S. corporations aren't hiring these days. Nonsense. They added 1.4 million jobs last year alone, overseas. For example, more than half of Caterpillar's new hires in 2010 were in foreign countries. Many more of this giant's jobs are headed offshore in the near future, for Caterpillar, which was once an iconic American brand, has recently invested in three new plants in China. It'll not only manufacture tractors and bulldozers there, but it'll also begin to ship its design work and technology development jobs to China. Likewise, DuPont, once proud of its U.S. workforce, has slashed its number of American employees in recent years while increasing its Asia-Pacific workforce by more than half. Indeed, DuPont no longer considers itself American. We're a global player, sniffs its chief innovation officer. Such homemade brands as Coca-Cola, Dell, and IBM are also among a multitude of corporations abandoning our shores and our middle class. Of course, they still keep their well-appointed headquarters here so the corporation and top executives can continue enjoying all that America has to offer. Calvin Coolidge once asserted that what's good for business is good for America. That was myopic enough, but today's narcissistic CEOs are even more self-serving, declaring that what's good for business is good for business. America be damned. This is Jim Hightower saying, if we're to have a united society, America cannot tolerate such raw selfishness by the privileged few. We can have a plutocracy or a democracy, but not both.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com. Oh, yeah.
Sanity for a change. The Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. I've got Professor Wolf on the line, professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. I appreciate you sticking around. I wanted to get to the end of this. What's the answer? We see people out in the streets, and finally, I think it's a good thing that we're starting to see people come together and realize some of the things that we've been talking about. Where do we go to from here, though? Where do you think it takes us?
Let me make a suggestion that I've been working on and come to over the years of trying to puzzle out the answer to your good question. Here we have now somewhere, depending on how you count, between 20 and 30 million people that are in the group called U6 by the Bureau of Labor Statistics in Washington. That's a group of people composed of adults who are looking for work but don't have it, people who are unhappy in a part-time job because they want a full-time job, and three, the people who've given up looking, the ones that we now call marginal or discouraged workers. You put those three together, we're talking 25 million people, more or less. We need to have a program, a jobs program for them. But what we need is something more than what we have thought about in the past if we really want to change it. And here's my suggestion, and I'm taking this from a suggestion made by the United Steelworkers of America, who have entered into an arrangement with a very interesting group of people in Spain, about 100,000 workers in Spain, in something called the Mondragon experiment. And the American Union, the steelworkers, are very courageous by working this out. Here's the thought. Let's have those workers get jobs. Let the federal government help set that up. But let it set it up in a new way. Let these enterprises be enterprises in which the workers not only do the work, but also function as their own board of directors. And let me explain what that means. Monday to Thursday, they come to work and they do whatever their particular job is, their job description. Friday, they come to work and they don't do their normal job. They sit around making the decisions what to produce, how to produce, where to produce, what to do with the profit. This is crucial, and I'll tell you why. If the workers were not only making the goods and services and producing the profits, but in a position to get those profits into their own hands and decide what to do with them, then they would be contributing those profits to shaping American politics, to shaping American culture. If workers themselves ran the corporations, guess what? They wouldn't be moving their jobs away to another country. They wouldn't be using the technology that damages their own health. And they'd be using the profits in all kinds of socially useful way for the communities they live in, rather than sustaining a system of inequality and unfairness, because they would have no reason to do that since they sit on both sides of the divide. They're not just the workers, but they're also their own boss. You know, in my classes over the years, I always give a piece of paper out at the beginning of each semester, and I say to the workers, what do you most want out of life in terms of economics and your job. And the overwhelming majority always say the same thing to me. I'd really love to be my own boss. Well, here's the irony. To do that as an individual is a very hard role. Very few Americans can really do that. The one way to become part of at least the process of being your own boss is the suggestion I made, the very thing that those 100,000 workers in Spain achieved in Mondragon. And I think that would change American politics. It would give workers the power of the profits their labor produces, because it would give them the chance to use them. That would be a counterweight to corporations and the way they use their profits. And until we do something like that, we're going to never have the level playing field that will allow us to realize the picture that Jim Hightower so beautifully articulated in what you just played.
And I agree with you. I think we've got to be moving more towards those kind of co-ops and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you know, there's a long tradition in the United States of cooperative effort. You know, Americans like teamwork. Well, how about teamwork on the job? Why isn't a team of workers perfectly qualified, and it would make a whole country better if those people had a chance to do something with those profits rather than have them used to sustain the privileges of a very small minority?
Well, you couldn't control them then. Professor Wolf, I appreciate the time. The website, rdwolf.com. We've got a link over at our site at therickssmithshow.com. It is always great and informative and educational talking to you, Professor Wolf. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and I appreciate the kind of material you put on your program. It's a real public service.
Thanks so much, Professor.
Take care.
We're going to go to the phones real quick. Mark Rowan from Madison, Wisconsin, to give us an update. Mark, welcome to the program, buddy.
How you doing, Rick?
How are things going there?
Good. We got another win for Wisconsin today, if you haven't heard yet.
We've been talking about it all night. The fact the judge opened the place up, that's a win, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely a win. Instead of this ratio of one in, one out that they've been doing over the last 2 days, if the doors aren't open tomorrow to the general public, like they were at the beginning of this rally, Scott Walker will be held in contempt of court and charged with a felony. To me, that's a win.
And I hope he breaks it. I hope he's in contempt. I hope he does what I hope he'll do.
Yeah, it would be nice. It'd be one way to get him out of office now, wouldn't it?
I was watching your stream. Thank you for the work that you're doing, putting this stream on the internet over at Ustream. I was watching the stream of the folks who came in all at once. Tell me about that.
What happened was somehow a door got unlocked. Nobody seems to know how it opened up, but it opened up.
Magic.
and flooded in. A bunch of people flooded in because, as I was saying all night on my stream, what you're seeing was never the mass of populace that actually was outside the Capitol wanting to get in. And when they stormed the doors, they took the cops by surprise at first, and they managed to corral them in that hallway that comes into the rotunda.
Right. And I understand now everybody's out of the Capitol?
Yes. That's the one side of the coin here. The business hours are 8 to 6, so at 6 o'clock, everybody has to be removed from the Capitol as part of the restraining order. The only time that they'll be allowed to be in, it's like the beginning of the rally all over again. If they have hearings and testimonies, which I talked to one representative, he was discussing the possibility of maybe tomorrow or the next day having testimony set up. So then the Capitol will be open again, and it'll be just like the first week where they're giving testimonies all night long to keep the Capitol open so people can stay in there.
So I'm assuming tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, there are going to be people busting through the doors.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody's ready to come back in, and it's the crowd outside is only getting bigger, and I'm pretty sure this news, once everybody gets home tonight and calls their friends and family, Tomorrow and the next day should be pretty big. The biggest rally is going to be on Saturday. That, as you know, over the course of the Saturdays, it's grown. You know, the first Saturday was almost 70,000. The second Saturday, it was well over 100,000. And this Saturday, I'm guessing it's going to be, you know, 100, 150,000 people.
Amazing, amazing stuff. And the more this guy, the more bizarre stuff this guy does, the bigger the crowds get. And you know, good. This is what we need.
Oh, yeah. And it definitely, definitely. They've done, Scott Walker and his crew have done a real good job of keeping a media blackout on it. But, you know, that's the whole reason I started the Ustream, to get it out there. But, yeah, information is still getting out there. The power of the internet, people are realizing how powerful just the internet is, and actually stopping the information from getting out is a lot more difficult than it used to be.
And I think the work that you're doing is fantastic. We appreciate the stream, and I hope you'll be back there tomorrow. Let us see what happens. How's the press pass thing coming along? Have you been able to get a pass every day?
Today was the first day I was allowed back in the building. When DME decided, Diversified Media Enterprises decided to take me on as a producer in my team, we went there with our credentials from DME, and we were met at the door by a reporter because you cannot get into the building without the day press pass.
Right.
And the problem is the only place they issue the press pass is up in the press room. So you have to get into the building to get into the press room to get that day's pass. You see the little circle they got going there.
Yep.
And we reluctantly had a reporter come down from, I believe he works for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And he told us, since we were union affiliated, even though this is completely volunteer, my Ustream is for anybody, and everybody has access to it. It's not just for union members alone. He told us, basically, since we were union affiliated, that we were not allowed in. So that was 2 days ago. So we went back and we talked with the independent worker, which is DME, and, you know, they got, their board together, and they voted to go forward with this, violation of our rights, and basically told them what their intent was, and they said, well, I guess he can come back. So today was my first day actually inside, back inside the rotunda, back streaming. There's still hurdles that I'm dealing with. One of them is having power. They have us segregated now. We have our spot back on second floor, but we're not allowed to set up on the ground floor where the people are, and the people aren't allowed to come up to us to give their testimonies. So I still have that hurdle to deal with, and, you know, I'm just glad I'm back in the building and I'm back able to, you know, stream this live. I don't know if you've gotten to see the Fox clip of the palm trees in the background and
yep.
the angry rioters and claiming that that was Madison, Wisconsin.
Yep.
So, yeah, to me, it's very vital that I'm in there and doing this, because it seems like, for whatever reason, nobody wants to give the truth. It comes down to they know they're wrong, and if the truth gets out there and everybody knows they're wrong, this would be 10 times what it is.
Yeah, I think they'd lie when the truth would be better. That's why it's important for you to get in there and get that stream. We're going to have a link to our website at therickssmithshow.com for your stream, so people have the ability to see it. Mark, I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah, anytime, Rick. I appreciate all the confidence you have in me, and thank you for giving me the time to speak with your people.
All righty. Thanks, Mark. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Drowning in crafted lies. Save the USA and resume the time it finds. I'm taking all our money and shipping it offshore.
Job you're looking for.
saving work in America. One show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME. We make
history happen! Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
You know, in all of this, talk about, and I really like Professor Wolf. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a bright guy. I don't know if three segments was what I planned on, but you know, again, I think he's a bright guy. He's got some very good ideas, especially when it comes to tax policy, because they're the ones that I think are worth pursuing again, going back to the days when, we asked those at the very top to contribute a little bit. Instead of cutting health care and cutting benefits and kicking people off of adult basic, I think maybe, asking the very well-to-do, just for a little bit, which is why I find it interesting that Auditor General Jack Wagner has said that the state government is legally bound to continue the adult basic program that they had in place. They're legally bound, according to him. According to the AP, Wagner said Thursday that Governor Tom Corbett and lawmakers should continue using money from the state's 1998 settlement with cigarette manufacturers to extend adult basic until 2014. Corbett, the legislature's Republican majority leaders, and the state's Blue Cross Blue Shield insurers have decided not to inject more money into adult basic. So what you've got is you got 42,000 people basically kicked to the curb. And their option is to pay, four times as much as adult basic was?
Four and a half. 450% increase in cost for a policy that doesn't cover near as much as the original one. What a deal, huh?
What a bargain. And then you look at the fact that Team 4 in Pittsburgh, this guy Jim Parsons, he reports that, the day after they've stolen this subsidy for low-income workers, Parson reported that taxpayers are making it possible for a physician to be in the Capitol several days per week so that elected officials can receive quick medical attention if needed. Evidently, according to Parsons, he has obtained a contract for a guy named Dr. Paul Grosch. He's a semi-retired oncologist from Lancaster. Grosch receives $170 per hour for his services, plus benefits for medical, dental, vision, all that stuff. Taxpayers are picking up this entire tab, including his medical malpractice. Now, Daryl Metcalf, we all know the crazy Metcalf, from a Republican from Cranberry, said he has visited Dr. Grosch several times and not apologetic for it. In fact, he said, people are away from home, and a four-hour drive from Western PA to Harrisburg, you can't get back home to see your doctor because you're in a lurch. Now, here's my problem with this. Are you that bad of a planner that you can't say, you know what, I should have a doctor here? We have to have a special doctor? Also, the House of Representatives got 90 flu shots at $100 a piece. That's about $9,000. Again, you know, they're saying, well, you know, it's fun for us. Fine for us, but you low-income workers, the heck with you. Grosch's yearly income, $65,000 a year for just a couple of days a week. So to take care of our elite, to take care of our aristocracy, Jake, come on, give me that whole spiel about that long-term health care they've got.
Over $1,000 a day. I mean, when we went to the rally earlier in the week and we went to the press conference today, you know, what strikes me is, from a moral perspective, I mean, where is a sense of decency? Where is a sense of common human decency? Where are our values? We call ourselves, and when I get into the discussion of religion, I get a little angry. Because the same people who are saying that we are a Christian nation and demand that we say so are the same people that turn around and they support policies which are such an antithesis to what Christ taught, such an antithesis to basic human morality and decency. It just defies logic. I mean, is that the kind of society we want? I mean, has anyone stopped and just really contemplated where we're going with this? I mean, if you study history and you look at the great civilizations weren't defeated by their enemies. They were defeated from within, the moral decay from within. And I'm afraid I see some cracks in our armor, Rick. And, you know, I hope for the sake of the nation we don't go the way of Rome, but I see some similarities.
I find it ironic. I mean, really, I just find it absolutely ironic. And maybe we can have Dr. Grosch in the Capitol building, because I don't think that, you know, the legislators are using his services all the time. So maybe we could just line people up outside the Capitol, and he could see them one at a time, you know, so they have access for a doctor since we're paying for it. Maybe we could try that. I just find it incredibly hypocritical, especially for someone like Metcalf, a T-Twizzler like that. It is just absolute. It's one of those things where it's the height of hypocrisy. You know, the folks who are saying, well, you know, all these state workers and all these government workers, they have such lavish benefits. State workers don't get those benefits. Legislators do, though. Think about that. I mean, that is just, it's amazing to me. But again, he has no shame. Offers no apologies. Well, you know what? It's for my convenience, because I'm somebody. I'm Darrell Metcalf. I'm the guy who offers all this insanity. But I should have health care where you have not.
And the original cost, now, they were throwing out numbers today at $163 million. That might have been inflated from last year. The numbers I saw, $136 million. Now, $136 million, you know, for the average person, nice little chunk of change, but in the context of the budget.
No, but
it's not that much.
In the context of what it's going to cost us. Because, look, it's going to cost us more in the long run. That's how short-sighted we have become
absolutely.
As a society.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, absolutely short-sighted we have become. Because, you know, I guess we're not able to see beyond the tip of our nose. We're not able to understand that, you know, the people who need this health insurance, they're going to get it one way or another. Even if they have to show up on the doorstep of the emergency room half dead. It's going to happen one way or another. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Wisconsin Democratic Representative Brett Halsey back after this.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hellwind.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show. Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Senate Republicans passed a resolution Thursday calling on police to take state Senate Democrats into custody for contempt of the Senate. It's not an arrest warrant and doesn't come from a judge. The Wisconsin Democrats say they didn't flinch at the news and are staying put in Illinois in defense of collective bargaining for public workers. The Wisconsin Professional Police Association slammed the Republican action, saying using forcible detention of elected officials because they won't allow you to dictate with a free hand is an unreasonable abuse of police power and is insanely wrong. The Wisconsin Capitol remained locked down Thursday as a court hearing continued to win open public access again. Even as a reporter, I had a hard time getting in on Thursday. This is what getting in sounded like.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to get into the building, please.
On the opposite side is the entrance.
There's only one entrance open?
The entrance is on the opposite side.
Could you explain to us why the judge's order is not being honored and all doors open to the public? I mean...
Gayla Olson of Black Earth, Wisconsin, describes what it was like once she managed to finally get into the Capitol building.
We had four police officers around us, okay? Four police officers, and then we had to be escorted by two police officers just to get out of the building. It was like a police state.
Everywhere you go in this Capitol now, police are here and the hallways are empty. Just about 100 protesters in the rotunda downstairs pounding on a drum. Police everywhere asking for IDs. This is not the people's house anymore in the Wisconsin tradition of how it normally is here. And people are gathered outside, hundreds of them, in the cold, and they're angry about this. And they are demanding to be let inside as they express their passionate disapproval of the lockdown of the people's house. Inside, about 100 demonstrators are still here who have been spending the night here, and right now there's a drum circle going on in the Capitol Rotunda here in Madison, keeping the drumbeat of this protest, this pro-worker protest, alive here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Jessica Eanes is one of the roughly 100 protesters still sleeping overnight in Wisconsin's capital. She expects the court soon to order the doors open to the public.
Hope that they would actually open the doors because it would just break my heart if the Department of Administration put themselves in contempt of court.
Democratic state lawmakers like Representative Fred Clark again set up their desks outside Thursday to protest the lockdown.
As long as the building remains effectively in a lockdown, as long as that's the case, we'll come out here to allow those people to exercise their right to speak with their representatives.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I salute every one of those people in that rotunda. I salute every one of those folks who show up to Madison, Wisconsin to have their voice heard. And I salute our next guest, Democratic Representative Brett Halsey. Representative, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick, we miss you, buddy.
I miss being there. I got to be honest with you. We were thinking about it last night, taking the long drive again, but here we are. A big victory, I understand, here tonight.
Yeah, Governor Walker's, turning the state capitol into Alcatraz was struck down by a judge as unconstitutional. So it's public one, Scott Walker zero. So.
Hopefully that'll be the first of many victories over Mr. Walker. I understand tonight there was a little moment of slight tension. Nothing chaotic, just a little bit of a little tension there.
Yeah, a bunch of us were rallying outside. There's several thousand people rallying outside, and the doors opened, and we thought we had won the decision to come in right then. So a couple of hundred of us ran into the building only to find that we found a little police reception, but we were able to calm the crowd down. So.
Yeah, because when I saw that, because I was watching on our friend's Ustream thing there, my first thought went to what fake news over at Fox would come up with, that you guys had kicked down the door and beat up a bunch of old ladies and done a whole bunch of really bad things. But somebody just opened the door and you walked in.
I think a couple of people thought it was meant, you know, we had won the decision totally. But the decision that the governor has to return the Capitol to normal use by next Tuesday. So The folks who were sleeping there decided to go. We're actually out at a pub, Irish pub, getting a beer right now. So
good for you. Let me ask you, who's the contractor that is going to clean up the, or supposedly going to clean up your Capitol? $7.5 million, they say, is going to be the cost to clean up the adhesive and the tape. Whose brother-in-law got that contract?
Yeah, it was funny because, you know, they sandblasted and cleaned, steam cleaned the outside of the Capitol for only $5.5 million. But, no, I hope it's not Scott Walker and the Koch brothers cronies on that, because that's a sweet deal for $7.5 million. I think, you know, you can clean the tape off the walls with a little Formula 409 and some a little elbow grease.
I think the kids would do it. I think the people who were there would do it because, like I told the one girl I saw on her hands and knees scrubbing the floor because someone had spilled something. I was going to take a picture and send it to her mother because I'm sure that she doesn't do that at home, but she did it there in the state's capital.
Yeah, these protesters were cleaner than my teenagers. Let's just put it that way. So
let me ask you, evidently a policeman got caught in an elevator?
Yeah, we were stuck by a door and the elevator, a police officer was stuck and they called 911 and they wouldn't even let the firefighters in to go rescue the guy stuck in the elevator. So, we testified that at the hearing today, and that was part of the judge's reason for ruling it unconstitutional, I'm told.
So as we move forward now, when things go back to normal business, will the Democrats do as they had done in the past and hold a lengthy hearing to allow people to be in the Capitol?
We're gonna take it day by day. We're trying to develop a dialogue with the governor. We have a compromise proposal on the table that saves $100 million more than his plan. But it protects people's health care, our freedom, right to organize. And we're hopeful we can, reach a reasonable compromise, but we're ready to go back to 24/7 hearings if we have to, I guess. So.
Because that's the question I keep getting from people. Where does this resolve? If you have a governor who's a recalcitrant governor who under no circumstances wants to negotiate, it's his way or the highway, what options are you left with?
Well, and after hearing that Koch brothers tape, you got to be kind of careful about what he says. But I think he's ready to get Wisconsin off the. We don't want Wisconsin to be the brunt of every late night comedian's jokes for the next month or so. But
yeah, I agree. I have to give you credit. I watched a video on YouTube yesterday of one of the representatives, one of the Republicans, senators being spoken to. The people were expressing their opinion of something he had said, calling them slobs, I guess. And you came to his aid. I don't know that he really needed it, but it was still a nice gesture on your part.
We wanted to make sure he got back in the building safely. That was not his crowd outside, but he tends to kind of provoke he likes to call people slobs, and some people take offense to that. These people have been locked out of their capital for 2 days, have been sleeping on the pavement, so there was a lot of passion in the audience. So.
Yeah, I remember that, and that's the amazing thing. I think you guys are doing outstanding work out there. Please keep it up, because if you win there, maybe we don't have to fight that battle here.
Well, it's we're doing all we can, Rick, and the people can go to wisdems.org if they want to help out. The Democratic Party here is helping organize, and we're kicking off 8 recall efforts on Saturday for this Republican state senators, so we'll see how that goes. So.
And what happens if you're able to? How long is that process going to take, and what do you think is going to come of that?
It's 60 days to get the signatures and then the elections, but, they'll know that, we don't want to take away our freedoms, our workers' rights, or in union and members' ability to bargain. So.
All right. I'm not going to hold you up. I know you got a beer waiting for you. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and celebrate. This is a victory well won.
Absolutely. Thanks for all your help, Rick, and fight on in Pennsylvania.
All right. Thanks so much, Representative. Representative Brett Halsey, Democrat from Wisconsin. I look at this, and again, it's just amazing to me that, one, you got a firefighter caught in an elevator, and the police aren't going to let them in to get the guy out. Like, these firefighters are going to storm the Bastille and take over and behead the mighty king.
You know, we laugh about it, but what if there was someone seriously injured? I mean, you know, that could be serious consequences. And, you know, we keep talking about it, but I hope nobody seriously gets hurt or even killed. That would be a real shame.
Right. Also, the Wisconsin legislature has reintroduced a bill. Now, we all remember the prank phone call of the guy from the Buffalo Beast who acted as the billionaire Tea Party guy, David Koch. He called Scott Walker, and, you know, they had that nice 20-minute chat that I encourage everyone to spend a little time, the 20 minutes, listening to, because it's very revealing, and it's pretty scary all at once, that you've got a sitting governor who really thought about causing violence among his constituents. It's pretty amazing. But the Wisconsin legislature has introduced... the bill is introduced by Republican State Senator Mary Lesich and State Representative Mark Hondell. They're actually reintroducing a bill that would make prank phone calls illegal. And what it would do is be a mandatory fine of $1,000 to $10,000 for anyone who falsifies caller ID, gives a fake number, or otherwise tries to deceive a caller. A call recipient to defraud them, cause harm, wrongfully obtain information, whatever. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that in the aftermath of that very revealing phone call, you see the Republicans going, well, we don't want that to happen again, so we'd better make it illegal.
But they seriously, now this is incredulous, they seriously told the press that was there, well, this has nothing to do with the phone call that the governor got. Oh, really? Oh, come on. Come on now.
It's just amazing stuff. And, you know, the insanity just doesn't seem to end there. What you've got is you've got the Senate Republicans threatening. They've actually passed a thing going to go after these senators, going to go arrest them with force if necessary, fine them $100 a day. It's pretty scary to watch the lengths that these folks will go through just to push their worker killer bill through. And what I found interesting is, you know, this representative, this Scott Fitzgerald, he's the Senate Majority Leader there. He said that he wanted, you know, these Democrats to return by 4 o'clock today, and of course they weren't going to, and he wanted them taken into custody. He said that we simply cannot have a democracy be held hostage by a minority who wants to prove a point. Because as you know, the Senate Democrats have been out of the state, since February 17th. Because they were saying, look, we're not going to pass Walker's bill. Not going to happen until people have a chance to read it. Now, you need to have 20 senators to have a quorum. The Republicans only have 19. So Fitzgerald, the Republican, said that, you know, they're kind of nervous about taking the steps of going after these people and doing some of the craziness that they do. But, you know, the Democrats, they've created a constitutional crisis. And in his very paternalistic tone, you can envision this, you know, standing on the mount and speaking down on the little people. The majority leader there in Wisconsin, Scott Fitzgerald, said, this is not about budget repair bill or politics. Much bigger than that. And the minority party has forced our hand. They're insulting the very fabric of our representative democracy. You mean like listening to the people, the hundreds of thousands of people who were marching in your streets? Or is like the guy in Ohio, the Senate Majority Leader, the president there in Ohio said, well, it's nice that they've come, but we're going to do what we want anyway? Amazing stuff.
Let's say they follow through with that. Who goes after these people?
Well, they can't go on state lines.
No, they can't by law. But who goes after? Let's say they think that they try to sneak in this back in the state. Who goes after?
Well, the state police.
State police.
State police. And they, you know, who knows? It's just nuts. Why not come to the table and negotiate? You know, what this is that Walker's got, he's hell-bent for leather. And that's all it's about. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. Why sing about the
con and conservatism. Rick Smith.
By gollies, America is still an exporting powerhouse. In fact, our corporate chieftains have made us number one in exporting America's most precious goods. Our jobs, factories, technologies, and middle-class opportunities. With unemployment and underemployment devastating millions of families in our country, perhaps you've assumed that U.S. corporations aren't hiring these days. Nonsense. They added 1.4 million jobs last year alone, overseas. For example, more than half of Caterpillar's new hires in 2010 were in foreign countries. Many more of this giant's jobs are headed offshore in the near future, for Caterpillar, which was once an iconic American brand, has recently invested in three new plants in China. It'll not only manufacture tractors and bulldozers there, but it'll also begin to ship its design work and technology development jobs to China. Likewise, DuPont, once proud of its U.S. workforce, has slashed its number of American employees in recent years while increasing its Asia-Pacific workforce by more than half. Indeed, DuPont no longer considers itself American. We're a global player, sniffs its chief innovation officer. Such homemade brands as Coca-Cola, Dell, and IBM are also among the multitude of corporations abandoning our shores and our middle class. Of course, they still keep their well-appointed headquarters here so the corporation and top executives can continue enjoying all that America has to offer. Calvin Coolidge once asserted that what's good for business is good for America. That was myopic enough, but today's narcissistic CEOs are even more self-serving, declaring that what's good for business is good for business. America be damned. This is Jim Hightower saying, if we're to have a united society, America cannot tolerate such raw selfishness by the privileged few. We can have a plutocracy or a democracy, but not both.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to the website and download our podcast there for your entertainment, your enjoyment, and convenience. We appreciate any comments, questions, ideas, thoughts, all that stuff. Rick at thericksmithshow.com is how you can get that to us. Or give us a call here at the studio, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our Borowitz report, Andy Borowitz, .com. He writes, a new combatant entered the so-called tablet wars today and is already getting a big thumbs up from the gadget aficionados. The Etch-a-Sketch 2, or the E2 as it's called, looks very similar to its predecessor. But in the words of the company spokesman who unveiled it at the TED conference in Long Beach, it's not your father's Etch-a-Sketch. Like the traditional Etch-a-Sketch, the E2 has many familiar features, a red case, vertical and horizontal knob controls, but it's also tricked out with some decidedly 21st century features like Wi-Fi and a camera. The Etch-a-Sketch 2 is more than just a tablet, said Tracy Klugen, spokesman for Ohio Art, the manufacturer of the E2. It's going to totally change the way you think about completely unnecessary devices. While the Etch-a-Sketch 2 clearly wowed the lion's share of attendees at TED, it was not without its detractors, like Zach Besserman, 5, who said, if I'm in the middle of drawing a doggy or a tree, why would I want to use the phone? That's just dumb. Mr. Besserman also said he preferred his original Etch-a-Sketch because you didn't have to charge it every 15 minutes. Jessica Siemens, 4, said she was impressed by the Etch-a-Sketch 2, but was reluctant to pull the trigger on it, saying, I've heard that Etch-a-Sketch 3 is going to be amazing. I love Andy Borowitz. It just tells you how crazy things have gotten with some of the bizarre stuff that's out there. Just nuts. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Rick on line one. How are we doing tonight, Rick?
Hey, not bad. Actually, for me, it's this morning. It's 8:51 a.m. and I don't get to call you guys because I'm out working, but it's a little snowy here where I am in Afghanistan. So lucky me, I get to call you guys and listen to you on the internet. I hope this the Skype microphone's working good.
From Afghanistan, sounds terrific.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, anyway, number one, I love the coverage you guys have done with this, and I think the governor's behavior in Wisconsin is insulting everyone. You know, this come in, I'm in charge now. I got the vote. Screw you. Ram it down your throat stuff is reprehensible. It's insulting to everyone on both sides of the aisle. And he wasn't elected the dictator. He was elected governor, not the big shot. You know, yeah, well, I'll show you guys. That's maddening. And in a way, I think he's actually doing us on labor's side a favor, because it's enough to jack everybody up and get them rallying and get them mad. So I don't know if he's as smart as he thinks he is, because it might be good for us.
Well, I think it's going to be very good for us.
Yeah, I think the question for you guys, I was reading online this morning that he's imposed a fine of $100 a day for all the state representatives, the Democrats that aren't in Wisconsin. Is that the case? And if so, how long can he do that? And that doesn't seem like much to me, $100.
Well, they're saying that they're going to fine each of the senators $100 for being away. And that was the Senate doing that through their rules. Again, you know, some of the senators are saying that he can't do that, but that's something for the courts to decide. And I would guess that...
Hey, well, you know...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would guess...
Hey, if you guys... There we go again, sorry.
No, you go ahead. I'll wait.
No, I was going to say a little delay here. I was going to say, hey, if they decide they want to put together a collection you guys want to do, let me know, and I'll send you something by carrier pigeon if I have to. I'm all for kicking in for that. I'll pay as much as I can to help defray the cost of the $100 fine.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and we should look into that. Excellent idea. Thanks so much, Rick.
Hey, thanks. Talk to you guys later.
Stay safe over there, brother.
Hey, we'll do.
Wow, 8:15 in the morning over there. It's amazing. Perfectly clear.
Very good. Very good connection.
Anyway, at the TED conference today, Bill Gates was giving a speech about education, health care, you know, pensions, you know, education, you know. Mr. Gates, again, you know, I look at this guy. He steps out and he says, look, our entire way of compensating teachers is way out of whack. You know, those pensions are way out of whack. This from a guy worth $55 billion. Somehow, him being able to accumulate $55 billion is A-okay. That's just beautiful. But that school teacher who's going to retire with an $18,000 pension, well, screw her. She doesn't deserve that. That's out of whack. Am I the only one who thinks that him saying that is out of whack? What he's talking about is, he says, you know, the whole way we compensate teachers is just insane, he says. Because we base on seniority and education. We need to base on results. So, and to a degree, I agree. Problem is, you're only going to get teachers who are going to want to teach in desirable school districts. Because who's going to want to put their career on the line in an area where you're not going to get results? You're not going to get teachers to go into inner city schools, because if it's based purely on performance, these schools are having a hard time because we have such poverty in these areas. For me, education starts at home. You want to talk about the problems with our education system? Pretty simply, one of the big problems with our education system is we don't have a parent in the home like we had in the 50s and 60s. For me, I would say, you know, when we had strong unions and one income could support a family, you had somebody at home who would read every night. My wife sits down and reads to our kids every night. Why? Because she's home with them. She's got the time. You know, if she, and we've talked about this, if my wife had to work and number of hours that I work, we would have someone else raising our children, going to daycare, being housed products instead of children. And do you think they would get the attention that they get now? Absolutely not.
No, there's another problem here, Rick. You know, who is going to decide what is a successful teacher? What they get test scores? I know some teachers now are complaining that they're teaching for tests. Does that mean that they're a successful teacher? Does that mean that they prepared these kids for life? Does that mean that they took the extra time to maybe help a student who needed a little bit of more tutoring, or someone who challenged them and made a complete difference, a substantive difference in the future of that child? Who's going to make that decision? Is it just going to be based on money, or not on money, but on test scores? That's you better be very careful how you determine what is a successful teacher.
What I find interesting, though, is here's a guy, $54-55 billion, saying that, you know, paying the teachers a pension is out of whack. And I agree. There were a couple of things he said that I did agree with. The way they calculate things, I agree with. There should be we should get Arthur Anderson style accounting out of pension funds. I do agree with that. We should actually have money in them, instead of doing all this bizarre projecting that they do. Maybe we wouldn't be in the problems we're in here in the state of Pennsylvania if the state would have made the contributions they were supposed to make during all those years when the actuaries were saying, oh, it's funded, don't worry about it, take that money and use it somewhere else. Maybe had they fulfilled their obligation, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in now. But they needed their political points. My problem with Gates making these kind of comments is he's turning education into an industry, into a factory job, where, you know, you got these little things, these little heads, these little vessels called children, and you just open their head and pour in the knowledge. It doesn't work that way. And you know, I've been reading a couple of interesting articles lately about maybe we're overstressing kids. Maybe we're putting too much emphasis on these bizarre tests and we're not giving them enough opportunity to explore, which is why I've always been in favor of longer school days, longer school years, less classroom time, more experiential learning, more getting your hands dirty, more taking things apart, putting it back together, figuring out on your own how things work, exploring that type of education. To me, that's the best way you can possibly learn. You can't sit in a room, you know, using the SLAP method, which is the new preferred way of teaching, I understand, which stands for sit, listen, be attentive, and participate. So basically, you're just a little robot looking around and pretending like you're paying attention. If I could afford to send my kids to a Montessori school and there was one local, that to me is the ideal way of educating kids. We actually are doing, where you're actually learning by exploring your interests. What we're doing right now, I'm sorry, not cutting it. And all of these speeches and all of this re-jiggling things around, I'm sorry, just not working. I just don't see it. And I see Gates, this whole spiel, I see this adding more trouble than it's going to help. The $55 billion man wanting to deny a teacher of some sort of a pension just seems kind of out of touch to me. Amazing, amazing stuff. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Keeping the Chambers of Commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change. Time to rearrange. The world got strange. Yeah, I think it's time.
Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember to check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Let's go to Washington for an update on what's going on in the big town. I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, what's going on?
Well, you know, the president today had a press conference, if you want to call it that, wasn't that long, with President Calderon from Mexico. But before he really got into the questions, he got into this issue of what's going to happen in Libya. And, you know, what they said is that what he said was the success in Libya was because there was full ownership by the success in Egypt was because the full ownership by the Egyptian people, that they want to get that done in Libya. And of course, what we're hearing now is that the Libyans have their own council of 30 different people from around the country that is not Gaddafi. He also said it was time for Gaddafi to go, and that he has authorized the State Department and the Defense Department to look at all options, essentially, with that.
Well, it's time for him to go, and you know, I'm worried about ending up in some kind of a conflict over there, but clearly his time is up.
For sure. Also, in the same press conference with President Calderon, as you know, there has been a huge problem since NAFTA, SHAFTA, as I call it, was signed, with trucking between Mexico and the United States. Well, today they agreed that they're going to reduce the tariffs. One half of the tariffs that have been on these Mexican trucks will be lifted immediately. It's going to be a phased-in program, and they're going to have the U.S. Department of Transportation give these guys some driver's tests and language. And, of course, this has been a huge issue for unions in the United States. They didn't want the Mexicans to have an unfair advantage.
Yeah, yay. Since we sent all of our manufacturing jobs out of the country, let's start bringing in the service people to take those jobs as well. Nice.
Exactly the issue, and that's why, you know, some people are even saying, well, president's even giving in more than he should.
Well, here's the thing. I drove a truck for years. I worked in freight for 21 years. And, you know, that was a huge issue for me. I mean, you cannot compete with someone who's willing to work for $5 a day.
And who doesn't speak English. And who doesn't necessarily know how to drive that well.
You know, I made the argument a couple years ago that they had gone and changed all the roads. Everything's uniform on the highway system across the country. It's all uniform, so all you need to know is a couple of quick things. They'll hand out these little TA cards or Petro cards, and you'll be able to live in truck stops, you know, much like the American drivers, only you'll be making $5 a day.
Not fair.
Not at all. What else is going on?
Okay. The other interesting thing that the president is dealing with, actually it's the vice president, is the budget. And, again, this, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's a very big Democrat and was talking about the president and making sure the president can keep their base. Well, the vice president today met with Harry Reid, Democrat, Mitch McConnell, a Republican from the Senate, Boehner, the Speaker of the House, Pelosi, former Speaker, and now the Democratic leader. And the Democrats were kind of calling it a summit. The Republicans said no summit. And the vice president issued a one-sentence summary of the meeting, said, well, we've talked and we're going to continue to talk. Also in the meeting was Chief of Staff of the President's, Bill Daley, and the Budget Director, Jack Lew. But the issue is, what is happening with this budget? Because the president is now saying, well, we'll meet them halfway, almost $50 billion. The Democrats are also saying, well, wait a minute, what's an earmark? Are the earmarks authorized national programs such as Teach for America, Close Up, all of those kinds of programs? They don't necessarily consider that an earmark. And so the definition of earmarks plus the president saying that he may meet them halfway, almost at $50 billion, don't know how that's going to play.
Yeah, this whole budget process scaring me on so many levels. We're going to be balancing our budgets on the backs of those who are least able to afford it.
Well, you know, Senator Sanders has put out a lot of information about this on his website, and he is very concerned about what this really means. And we still don't see the oil subsidies off the table.
Yeah, and that's another thing that just drives me absolutely nuts. You know, here in Pennsylvania, we had a press conference. Our governor is giving away $833 billion to corporations at a time when we're talking about cutting $1 billion from education and all of the other deep draconian cuts that are coming. I guess we have money to give to corporations and the wealthy, but we don't have money to educate our children or feed them.
This is certainly going to be an issue, and the president is going to be walking a very fine line, Rick Smith, because people are not happy campers.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not happy with President Obama today at all over the Mexican truck thing,
right?
And over a bunch of other things. But that's another in the long list of things. And speaking of prices and food, what else you got for me?
Oh, okay. Well, the only other thing that I think is sort of interesting has to do with the military. And, again, this speaks of a lot to people who are listening to the Rick Smith Show, and that is General Martin Dempsey. He said that soldiers need more than a year to recover from deployments, and he is very concerned about the fact that we are sending soldiers in and out. That's putting a lot of stress on the military and, of course, on military families. And then the other issue is that Secretary Gates said he wants to get rid of $914 million from the Army Humvee, and people are concerned, of course, at how this might affect local communities. But I think it's interesting that finally people are realizing that these deployments are really creating lots of hardships and that people are not ready to go right back into the field.
Gee, you thought we'd have figured that out. Oh, how long we've been in Iraq? How long we've been doing this?
Exactly.
And it's just now coming to someone's attention?
Well, you know, it is interesting. I actually met the Surgeon General on the Army on a plane, And they are really doing a lot of research, but it really took Walter Reed sort of falling apart for somebody to come in and fix it and to begin to do and figure out some of these studies and figure out what's bothering our people and figuring out the post-traumatic stress issues. And, you know, there's still another issue that people have actually come to me about, and we're beginning to do some investigative research about this, about the fact that they are still not giving people their disability payments, et cetera, saying, well, no, you don't really have post-traumatic stress, or even more than that, traumatic brain injuries, when in fact people have MRIs, et cetera, that actually show that they're having it.
Here's the thing. The bottom line in all this is, you know, if these are the people we're going to call heroes, we need to treat them like that. Because if we don't take care of the people that we're calling our heroes, who will step up and be the next generation of heroes when we need them?
Well, and that's right, and people aren't going to sign up for the military if they see their uncle or their father or somebody else like that who's not been treated appropriately.
Amazing stuff. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, I appreciate the time. Look forward to our update tomorrow night.
Thank you.
All righty. You know, I got to be honest. You know, the more I think about that, you know, how we treat the people who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and the people that we call our heroes, the 9/11 folks, all of them, how we treat them, it's infuriating. And, you know, as I said, when all of this started years ago, I don't want my children to look at the uniform the way I did as a kid. The people that I saw coming back from Iraq or the people I saw coming back from Vietnam were basically just dumped back into society. They were poor guys just dumped back into the housing project with horrible drug and alcohol problems, broken minds, broken bodies, and they were just left there. Dumped like trash. And I, again, one of the first things I said when this all happened is, I hope that doesn't repeat itself. I hope that we as a society learned from that era and would never make that mistake again. But it appears that since it's not on the front page every day and we're not seeing it and we've, again, pushed those problems off to the side, that it doesn't seem to be the priority that it should be. And, you know, I give those men and women the highest honor, the most credit possible. But at the end of the day, we need to take care of them, and we need to force the people in office who use them as props and use them as photo ops to do the right thing and to not to fund it. I mean, stop and think about this whole war, both wars. We're not funding this stuff. We're borrowing money to pay for this. There was no call for patriotic duty to support this. All we were supposed to do was go shopping, wave our flags. That's what we were supposed to do. There's never been a call to, hey, you know what? You need to kick in a little bit more. In fact, they cut taxes during this time of war. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. None whatsoever. We're going to take a quick break.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. We've archived all of our programs there for your entertainment, your enjoyment, your consumption. So feel free to go by and download a podcast or two and tell us what you think. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Here on the Harrisburg front, the anti-Linda Thompson movement is setting petitions. According to the Patriot News, the grassroots organization pushing for the resignation of the cuckoo mayor there, has scheduled a petition signing rally for noon this Saturday afternoon in front of the city government center at 10 North 2nd Street. It's called RUSHBG, Restore Unity and Sanity to Harrisburg, is the name of the group. Said the petition drive is proof that it intends to keep the pressure on Thompson unless and until members see major changes in her leadership. The group's president, Tom Metz, said the group, which has evolved from a February 14th demonstration outside City Hall, hopes to eventually net 5,000 signatures of city residents to show city council and the mayor that we're serious. You know, I look at this woman, and man, for the good of the city, you know, it's time. This whole charade, this whole thing gone a little too far. And you know, some of the folks that I've talked to who have worked for her, it's even more bizarre than the media is reporting, which I got to tell you is really bizarre.
I guess the question is, if you want recall, what's the process?
Well, I don't know that you can. I don't know that we have recall in Pennsylvania, do we?
You can't recall her?
No.
Well, then what?
She has to resign. I think the idea.
Well, that isn't going to happen.
Well,
I can't envision her resigning.
That's an interesting question, and we're going to have to look into that. But I think she's, you know, she's there until her term's up, unless you can somehow force her out. And you know, maybe there's something for sanity, because I do think there's some very serious problems there. That's just my opinion. Some of the behavior that I've heard of, and some of the behavior that you see, kind of just bizarre. Just kind of bizarre. Also, another story, though, of interest. You know how the governor went after the Democrats for their use on of, you know, state time for campaigning and all of that stuff. Remember that little thing? They called that what? Bonus gate? Remember all that?
Yes.
Interesting today, a development out in Pittsburgh. The Allegheny County Judge Jeffrey Manning has declared a mistrial in the public corruption case against the Ori woman there, Senator Jane Ori, Republican of Allegheny. The judge, Jeffrey Manning, said a fraud had been perpetrated against the court and ordered a mistrial. Now, understand, you know, Miss Ori, the senator, Jane Ori, and her sister, Janine, are charged with conspiring to use the senator's staff to do campaign work for a third sister, Joanne Ori Melvin, who was elected to the state Supreme Court. So, you know, there's all this information out there. Turns out, and this is kind of a weird thing, that the defense tried to, you know, rig some information, tried to forge, I guess, I don't know what it is, but tried to doctor some documents to make the chief witness against the senator, make her look bad. And, the judge said, you know, he could see. And he actually told the defense, quote, and I love this quote, Ray Charles could see that those signatures were doctored. So as a defense attorney, you stand up and go, well, I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about this. I'm shocked, aghast. And then they have the judge, hey, man, Ray Charles could see that stuff's doctored. So it'll be interesting now to see where this goes. As we move forward, maybe
that's fraud.
Yeah, maybe the charges get bigger, and maybe the trio find themselves as guests in the Gray Bar Hotel.
That lawyer could find himself disbarred.
All four of them.
Wow, this is serious stuff.
And I go back to that whole bonus gate thing. Again, you know, your governor, the guy you guys voted for. It was a political ploy. It was a stunt. They did the perp walk of the Democrats for political purposes. And these people, and thank goodness for that prosecutor out there in Allegheny County, who had the stones to go after them. Or these three be walking away scot-free.
And they, and here's the irony. He was accused, well, you know, it's tit for tat. It's you're going after Republicans just because Democrats. Well, you know what? Crime is crime. I mean, if we are the society we say we are, we have rules of law, it shouldn't matter who you are, rich, poor, Republican, Democrat, black, white, green, yellow. If you violate the law, you should be held accountable.
Right when this whole thing broke, I said, I don't care who it is, I don't care who they are, what party, if they've broken the rules, there's a place for them. And we try them equally, and we put them equally in that place. Usually a place with gray paint on the walls, a nice iron bar door in front, usually a toilet with no seat, and a very uncomfortable place to lay your head. And that would be a good place for him. Yet our governor, all he chose to do, go after Democrats. And then later on, maybe a couple of Republicans. And not these three at all.
No, but there's a leading Republican who still hasn't come to trial. From Philly, who was the majority leader of the House for years.
Yep.
John Purcell.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I don't think he's found guilty of anything.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. I don't think they're going to find him.
Why do you say that?
I just have a gut feeling.
Look, I think this is just me now, because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. This is just me. From what I understand, talking to some people who worked on the Hill, you know, that became pretty commonplace, but it was kind of something that a lot of people didn't talk about. It was kind of under the carpet a little bit. And what happened one year, I believe it was 06, the Democrats got a little careless, and too many people made too much money, and they flagrantly violated the rules.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, there were certain areas that went up in the law enforcement agencies, and we have what we have. I mean, Mike Vian is what was he sentenced to? Minimum 6 years? Which, for someone in his position, I think is pretty severe.
Yeah. Well,
was it 6 to 14?
Like I said, there's a place for him. And, you know, and I liked Mike Vian. I did. He was a good guy. He was always good to us. He always came on the program when we wanted him to. Always had interesting discussions. But look, the rules are what they are, and they're for everyone. But my problem is I don't know that Purcell will be found guilty of it. I just don't know that they're going to go after him with the same vigor that they went after Vian. That's just a personal opinion, just what it is.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. Interesting blog came out today, Rick. Yesterday there was a report came out from Wall Street, and I think you mentioned it, that reported about 62% of the public believes it's unacceptable to eliminate state employer collective bargaining rights, and that's about double 33% who think it's acceptable. The poll also showed that 77% of respondents believed public employees should have the same collective bargaining rights when it comes to health care, pensions, and other benefits. There's kind of like a corollary issue here. Americans also have strong views on who should pay to fix the federal deficit. And some of these numbers are a little surprising. They say that the rich should do so by far the most popular solutions for dealing with the deficit, including placing surtax on federal income taxes for those who make more than $1 million per year. 81% believe that. Eliminating spending on earmarks, 78% favored that. Eliminating funding for weapons systems, the U.S. Department of Defense says, aren't necessary. 76% favored that. And eliminating tax credits for oil and gas industries, about 74%. So some interesting results. Sometimes we think that because there hasn't been anything done on taxes that the public opposes it. Actually, the reverse is true. They believe that the rich aren't paying their fair share. Unfortunately, the state of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Wisconsin and Ohio are not the only states. Now we have another governor, Governor of Michigan. The UAW has come out and condemned the Michigan Governor Snyder's decision yesterday to eliminate collective bargaining rights for home-based child care providers. Snyder's administration announced it will stop deducting union dues for nearly 20,000 people who provide child care at home. That move will devastate child care providers. said Amy Woodold, who's president of the UAW Local 7127. The union is the only avenue they have to get their problems resolved, according to her. Snyder's budget proposal taxes pensions of retirees and fixed income, slashes the state's educational system, and raises taxes on the working poor by eliminating the earned income tax credit. Sounds very, very familiar. One other development, and this shouldn't surprise you, comes from Ohio. And of all the states, I think in the end we might have more trouble with Ohio than any other state. I hope I'm wrong on that. But I think Kasich is going to be a very tough nut to crack. About a week ago, Rick, the Ohio School Facilities Commission voted to take away the right for school districts and state to require, and that's key, PLAs or prevailing wages and contracts for school construction projects. Now, they may, but you can't demand that. Now, PLAs have proven themselves to be effective use in big projects involving government money.
It's just smart.
Basically, what it is, it's a plan. It's a plan of what you do in particular situations. And what it does is it makes better use of the manpower and ultimately saves taxpayers money. Now, because of the right-wing swing, they're saying we don't necessarily have to pay a prevailing wage, and now you don't necessarily have to have a plan.
Yeah, because our brother-in-laws need jobs.
That's pretty much it.
I mean, that's what it is in a nutshell.
That's pretty much it.
Cronyism at its best. Bring back the days of patronage. Yes! Oh, amazing stuff. I got an email during the break. Mike said, just caught this on the web. I'm speechless. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker on Thursday warned 14 absent lawmakers trying to stall his controversial budget bill to return to the state capitol immediately to vote on the measure, or layoff notices will be sent to 1,500 public employees before the weekend. Walker said at a press conference on Thursday, unfortunately, if we do not have action by tomorrow, we have a legal and moral obligation to start forewarning people. The layoffs will go into effect April 1st, the governor said. Mike writes, did this guy fall on and hit his head? Yeah, I think so. I think at birth is when that happened. Using the public sector workers as pawns in the game. And look, Rendell did it here in Pennsylvania. And they're all doing it because it's easy. The public workers are the convenient target. And as we've talked about for days now, this is about more than just budgets. This is about more than just a governor who's concerned about his state. What this is really about is political pay. What this is about is Walker wants to be king. He doesn't want anybody to have a voice around him. And that's what he is stealing away. But again, this idea that, if you do what I say, or I'm gonna hold these 1,500 people hostage. This guy not winning any popularity contests, and good. The more of these T-twizzlers who go off on the crazy train, the better we're gonna be come 2012. It is that simple. Well, thank everybody who came on the program tonight. Thanks for their callers. Thank you, Brett, for moving the knobs and the tubes and answering the phones. But especially thank you for being here. I appreciate it. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com. It is there for your entertainment, enjoyment. You can download our podcast we got several years of programs up there. If you want to contact me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally and sometimes use it here on the program. Thanks for being here, and we will see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USP.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg. Mm-hmm.